with tanks around the border. Just before midnight local time, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israeli troops would be going into Gaza. He accused Hamas of violating today's five-hour humanitarian ceasefire and said they continue to carry out aggression against Israel by firing rockets. The mission, Netanyahu said, is to take out Hamas tunnels that the group uses to launch attacks against Israel. But he said the mission could be expanded, and so far, more than 60,000 reserve troops have been called up.
I hope it will achieve its goals. I don't know exactly what the goals are, but I hope it will achieve its goals.
Israeli aircraft have struck more than 2,000 targets in Gaza since the fighting began. At least 260 Palestinians have been killed during that time.
Pro-Russian separatists who control the area have been accused of mistaking the plane for a Ukrainian aircraft. A social media message purportedly from the rebels' commander-in-chief was posted and later deleted. It read, "We have issued warnings not to fly in our airspace. We have video confirming."
Today, the whole world had seen the real face of the aggressor. Shooting down a civilian aircraft is an act of the international terrorism targeted against the entire world. This is a wake-up call for the whole world, and we expect it for an adequate response from the international community.
Ukraine claims to have intercepted a conversation between separatists and Russian military intelligence, which they're presenting as proof of their neighbor's involvement. The recording has not been independently verified. Russian President Vladimir Putin pointed the finger of blame straight back in the other direction.
The state over which territory it happened is responsible for this terrible tragedy. I've already given certain instructions to the military departments that they need to provide all necessary assistance in the investigation of this crime. And I also ask the government of the Russian Federation to do everything for a thorough investigation.
And continue to exploit this crisis in South Texas. So it makes sense that MS-13 and other gangs would do the same. At the Nogales Processing Center in Nogales, Arizona, the Red Cross has set up a bank of phones so that unaccompanied juveniles can call family members back home or even in the U.S. And these phones are being utilized by gang members to recruit, to enlist, to pressure people, other juveniles into joining the MS-13 gang. And the problem is we are unable to isolate these people. Because they are,
we have to look the other way.
If we see gang tattoos, we're not allowed to treat them any differently than anybody else that's applying to be allowed to stay here or to apply for asylum. We've had agents reporting that some of these juveniles have reported that they have committed murders in their home country. We've caught people fashioning homemade weapons such as shanks at the processing center. But because they are juveniles, they have to be treated a certain way, and you are not allowed to take them out of that that general group. They all have to receive the same kind of treatment. That's how our hands are being tied. And it's a security issue that we feel could really snowball out of control, and it would put agents at risk. It puts the other detainees at risk. It's activity that needs to be stopped immediately.
Between Texas Governor Rick Perry and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, these two have been going at each other over foreign policy in op-eds over the weekend. Rick Perry wrote, quote, "In the face of the advancement of the Islamic State, Paul and others suggest the best approach to this 21st century threat is to do next to nothing. I personally don't believe in a wait-and-see foreign policy for the United States." Then Rand Paul hit back with this, quote, "On foreign policy, Perry couldn't be more stuck in the past. Doubling down on formulas that haven't worked, parroting rhetoric that doesn't make sense, and reinforcing petulant attitudes that have cost our nation a great deal." And here's what the former vice president just had to say.
"I did express the view that I think isolationism is crazy. Anybody who went through 9/11, who thinks we can retreat behind our oceans and will be safe and secure is I'm sorry, but they're out to lunch."
We're seeing 2016. It's happening already. Rand Paul is very much running for president. I'd say you'd have to call him at least the putative front runner for the Republican nomination. He's got the biggest organization, the best organization so far. He's raising the dough. He's visiting the places. Rick Perry didn't do so hot the last time he ran for president, but is making a lot of noise about another run after his term as governor ends. Rick Perry looks like, it would look like what Rick Perry tried to do was take a shot at the front runner, because it sort of came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, poof, in the Washington Post, while Rick Perry is on the Rio Grande with Sean Hannity, looking cool and doing stuff and forcing the president into a meeting he didn't want to have about border security. Out of nowhere, all of a sudden, you have the governor of Texas just attack a senator from Kentucky on foreign policy by name. What you're more accustomed to hearing is things like what Dick Cheney said there at that event, where you don't name the person. You say, anyone who would believe this would be crazy. What Rick Perry said is, I think that's what Rand Paul thinks, and I think it's a bad idea. Mm. And he continually invokes the mantle of Ronald Reagan, talking about Reagan and peace through strength, that you don't have forces in the field as much as you have the threat of the use of American force, that it is most powerful the less it is deployed. Now, for Paul, so it's good, because when people like Perry are name-checking you and trying to get into a fight with you, just like, by the way, Ted Cruz did before, just like the way Chris Christie did before, that is solidifies your status as a front-runner. But to the bad, as you say, this is something that Paul is going to continually have to defend, because every Republican candidate who is looking for establishment support as they come through is going to whack Paul on this thing, just as they whacked his father, and they will continue to come through and hit him on this. So Paul is going to have a hard time.
Just like witches at Black Masses.
Yeah. I disagree with Senator Paul's representation of what America should be doing, and when you read his op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, he talks about basically what I consider to be isolationist policies, and America can no longer come back onto the continental United States and draw a red line around the shore of America and think that we're somehow or another not going to be impacted. We must engage and tactically, thoughtfully, using the assets that we have against ISIS to keep these individuals from being able to create an Islamic state in that part of the world that will put Jordan and put Israel's literal future in jeopardy. And we need to send clear messages and powerful messages. The idea that I'm for opening up the gates and sending multiple numbers of American troops back into harm's way.
I think this is a healthy debate, by the way. I don't think this...
Well, you know, it might be healthy, but that sounded like a bunch of name-calling to me, Sean. I'm happy to talk about the specifics. I think that the situation with ISIS has become worse because they have a terrorist wonderland over in Syria where they're organizing and coming up into Iraq. One of the curious things about ISIS is, do you know who the one country that's bombing them and trying to put them out of business? It's Syria. But we're supporting Islamic rebels in Syria against them. But what I would say to people who want to criticize me and call me names is, do they want to put troops back in? The Iraqis stripped off their uniforms and ran, wouldn't defend their cities, and you want our GIs to get on the ground and fight?
No.
So what in the world's a governor calling for? Is that what he wants, troops on the ground in Iraq?
You said you didn't blame Obama for Fallujah and Tikrit and Mosul and all these cities falling that our brave men and women fought and many died for.
Yeah, but that's not exactly accurate, Sean. I don't say I don't blame Obama, because I do blame Obama for emboldening ISIS in Syria by giving arms to the Syrian Islamic rebels. So I do blame him for that.
But you said you
disagree.
Didn't blame him for what was happening in Iraq.
Well,
hang on. You said you didn't blame him for what was happening in Iraq, but you said at war we shouldn't have been in.
But I did say also that his speech at West Point, where he said that jihadists and terrorism are on the wane, I don't agree with that. But I do say that his war in Libya and his arming of Islamic rebels in Syria have made the jihadists emboldened. There's more numerous, and they are more a threat to America. So it's unfair for people like Governor Perry to say I'm ignoring the situation or not conscious of this. I am very conscious of this. Not only that, I think the primary responsibility of the federal government is to defend our country and to defend our interests, And I have said that Maliki is an ally, the government of Iraq is an ally, and that we will support them.
But I have said
that troops on the ground is a mistake, and it's a very confusing situation. The only place where I'd have a mild disagreement with you, Sean, is that I think we do still provide intelligence and training.
No, he pulled out.
Let me finish that. I know, but let me finish. We trained the Iraqis for a decade, and they cut and ran. And so the thing is how long is it going to take these guys to figure out how to defend themselves?
We still have a presence in Germany. We still have a presence in Korea.
I don't think we're stopping war in either place, really.
But I think intelligence and training, if we still stayed there to do those two specific things, and I've talked to a lot of generals, and they seem to agree with me that pulling out early was the big mistake that Obama made because we politicized another war.
Right. But when you discuss a future is always there are alternate scenarios for futures. So, for example, if we had had 1,000 troops in Mosul, one possibility is that they would have been overrun and we'd be in a massive war and we would be back in there. If we want to clean up the cities that have been taken, it would take the equivalent of a surge. The military surge did work. It would take 50 to 100,000 troops. I don't think the American people, frankly, I think if you have 100 GIs on your show, they're not allowed to do this. But if they were, I think most of them would say they're not interested in going back into Iraq to fight with the Iraqis.
Debate over Iraq and the Iraq war promises an explosion and fallout heading into 2016, right up there with the Democratic fratricidal war of the election year of 1968 when it came apart as a party at the Chicago Convention over Vietnam. And just as then, the party that prosecuted the war is the one suffering from the division. Back then, it was Lyndon Johnson defending himself against Bobby Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy. Today, it's another Texas hawk defending himself against Rand Paul. It's the Hawks versus the Doves, this time on Republican turf. Can Governor Rick Perry stop Rand Paul? Can he lead a Stop Paul movement heading toward the coming convention in Cleveland? Well, it's been tried before, this effort to kill the chances of a rising candidate. I love this line from Richard Nixon and Patrick Buchanan's new book on the 1968 electoral comeback of Nixon. Quote, Buchanan, if you ever hear of a group forming up to stop X, put your money on X. Well, if Rick Perry's out to stop Rand Paul, history shows, then the senator from Kentucky might just be the candidate who ends up winning this thing, the one going up against Hillary Clinton. If they're already ganging up on Rand Paul and Perry thinks the smart thing to do is to pile on, I say put a few bucks on Rand Paul.
Rand Paul's headed in the right direction.
Let's take a look at this. Senator John McCain and Liz Cheney took shots at Rand Paul today, actually, while both made a point of saying they weren't taking sides between the two gentlemen, Perry and Paul. The two hawkish people there had these strong words for Rand Paul. Let's listen to them take sides, effectively.
Senator Paul is part of a wing of the party that's been there ever since prior to World War I in our Republican Party, and that is a withdrawal to Fortress America.
I think that, you know, I've got some big concerns about the extent to which Senator Paul seems to think we can be safe if we just come home and, you know, try to build a Fortress America. That's clearly not going to work.
Well, there you have it. They're going to the old guaranteed move, which was support the hawkish position, which is always the popular position, Bobby, for a war.
Yeah.
It's always the
popular. But remember, one of the doctrines of politics here is define yourself, don't let others define you. And Paul is smart enough, at least in terms of the rhetoric, to say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not an isolationist. I'm not saying, and again, to just go back to this key line, he's saying if we're strong, that doesn't mean we're going to have war. And he holds Reagan up as the model of this. So by putting the label on him of, oh, he's an isolationist, I mean, at least in terms of the words I've read.
Governor Perry has advocated returning troops to Iraq as he did at a Republican presidential debate in January of 2012. Let's watch it.
Well, I think that you have to, I would send troops back into Iraq because I will tell you, I think we start talking with the Iraqi individuals there. The idea that we allow the Iranians to come back into Iraq and take over that country with all of the treasure, both in blood and money that we have spent in Iraq, because this president wants to kowtow to his liberal leftist base and move out those men and women. He could have renegotiated that time frame. I think it is a huge error for us.
What do you think of that, General Moses? That
first of all,
rate?
I mean, I think the person gasping in the back was you.
I think it was George Stephanopoulos, actually. Off camera, it was me.
I mean, that's a position I'm sure he will not stick to. But, you know, your comparison with 1968 in the middle of the Vietnam War doesn't quite work because that was a hot war. We had hundreds of thousands of troops over there. We were bombing actively. Now the question is not so much the Iraq War, but the next war. Is there going to be a next war, and what is the basis for it?
Change in Iraq would bring about a number of benefits to the region.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency.
Now, Rand Paul, pointing to things like that, wrote in the Wall Street Journal also, many of those clamoring for military action now are the same people who made every false assumption imaginable about the cost, challenge, and purpose of the Iraq War. They have been wrong for so long. Why should we listen to them again? Your response?
With all due respect, John, I was a strong supporter then of going into Iraq. I'm a strong supporter now. Everybody knows what my position is. There's nothing to be argued about there. But if we spend our time debating what happened 11 or 12 years ago, we're going to miss the threat that is growing and that we do face. Rand Paul, with all due respect, is basically an isolationist. He doesn't believe we ought to be involved in that part of the world. I think it's absolutely...
Yeah. He did a very good job last week with President Obama in Texas. And this is a very healthy argument for he and Rand Paul to be having. It's good for the country. And I'm delighted to see two serious people willing to actually talk about ideas. I think it elevates from a lot of the junk we have nowadays that unfortunately clutters our political system.
I'd have to agree with that. So after this snarky comment about about the governor's glasses, Rand Paul then accused Perry of suggesting a plan to deal with terrorists in Iraq that's a lot like President Obama's. Now, if you're a Republican, that's a big ouch, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I think it's an important debate. I think the challenge to Perry is to explain how his approach would work and why it's important. He is a veteran himself. He is also, as the head of the Texas National Guard, been deeply involved in national defense matters for many, many years. He's making one case. Rand Paul's making a very different case. And, of course, Rand Paul has to work very hard to make sure people don't mistake his caution for isolationism. I think that's why you saw him react so sharply to Governor Perry's comments, that the word isolationist would dramatically cripple Rand Paul's potential campaign. So both of them have a lot at stake here. But the key thing is to recognize that 12 and a half years after 9/11, the United States is not safer, our strategies have not worked, and we need in both parties this kind of national debate about what are we going to do in an increasingly dangerous world.
I rise today to say that I think that it is abhorrent, and I think that most American people would be greatly distressed to know that some of your money could be sent to terrorist organizations, that some of your money could be sent to Hamas. Hamas has now joined a unity government with the Palestinian Authority. We give several hundred million dollars a year to the Palestinian Authority. I am appalled to think that we could be somehow indirectly paying for missiles that Hamas is launching on Israel. I support the resolution that will shortly come forward condemning Hamas's activities, but I want more teeth in this.
I think on a lot of these issues, yeah, that I'm well within the Republican tradition, well within those who are here. I think that we do need to have a stronger presence and project a stronger ideas of cultivating freedom around the world. And I also agree, though, with Ronald Reagan, who often said, or in one of his inaugural speeches said to potential adversaries, don't mistake our reluctance for war for a lack of resolve. Reagan was strong. He built up the military. He had a military that was second to none. I still believe all of that. So what's inappropriate is for people, particularly other Republicans, to mischaracterize or attempt to characterize my foreign policy as something it isn't. They're more than welcome to have their own, but they need to be a little more...
Well, stops turning. Ashes where the body's burning. War pigs have the power, and I've got a
It's a summer of scandals and war. Oops. As IRS hard drives selectively and mysteriously crash, another commercial airplane crashes under dubious circumstances. Whether a mistake, act of hostility, or false flag matters little. It is the news story to spin, distract, and program the aimless masses. Veterans die waiting in line, not in combat, but at the VA, while illegal aliens, under cover of refugee status, pour through our open, quote, secured borders without waiting in line. They bring disease, gangs, and as yet undiscovered or underreported or unreported security threats. Americans are divided not over football, but whether Israel should invade Gaza or if Palestinians are victims of oppression. The truth of the matter is that Israel is a sovereign nation, not part of these United States, and Palestinian, quote, government is as much to blame. What is the American interest in a conflict pitting Israel, Saudi, Iran, and fabricated Islamic State against each other? Enter Governor Rick Perry, the current establishment rhino point man in the continuing Empire Strikes Back strategy to crush the libertarianish conservative grassroots rebels. So far, the primaries have seen Cantor upset by Brad and chicanery by rhinos to defeat incumbents like McDaniel with, you know, by having Democrats defend, Thad Cochran, who a globalist-funded GOP PAC is set to unseat people like Amash and prevent even people like Miller from ousting rhinos. Why is the GOP spending more time, money, and vigor attacking conservative Republicans and protecting the right wing of the Democrat Party than they do gearing up to defeat Democrats in November or checking the imperial president now? They do it because we, plain old middle-class grassroots Americans, are waking up. Is it too slow? Is it too late? Is it too little? Who cares? We will fight standing rather than accept defeat on our knees. In the ongoing GOP civil war, the establishment corner keeps changing their pugilists, but the grassroots corner seems to have only one man standing and fighting round after round after round against new, fresh squishes. The junior senator from Kentucky stands tall for not only the most popular position, but the one that is actually right and principled. Rand Paul is the lead man for the truly conservative, sensible, and constitutional movement rising once again in America. It seems futile. It is certainly difficult, and the establishment has never been more established and powerful. But they are also, as always, weak. They are weak because they only have the power so long as we are willing to give it to them. Goldwater stormed the towers in 1964, but we had to wait until 1980 to wrest control from the rhinos. And, of course, thanks to G.W. Voodoo Economics Bush and his cronies, they began undermining that within the first year of Reagan's administration. Dr. Ron Paul paved the way through 40 years of tireless work, culminating in 2012. When the establishment had to steal the nomination from him. We don't have 24 years to wait. We must win in 2014 and 2016. The fight is on now. Will we allow the neocons who control both the right wing and the left wing of the war party to win the propaganda war so they can launch more wars on amorphous concepts like poverty, drugs, and a tactic of war, terror? Or do we sit back and watch them wage war against our wealth by easing us to a $0? Will we cheer their hot wars so long as they're directed at the other guy in the vain hopes they won't be waged against us? Or do we stand with Rand and fight on principle for the restoration of liberty, sanity, prudence, prosperity, strength, and virtue? This is not the first salvo, and it won't be the last sortie. Stand united behind the banner of the Constitution or remain divided and watch America fade with a whimper. Choose wisely. Don't delay. You have a choice. You work hard now. We still have primaries. To further liberty by having real conservatives and libertarianish conservatives take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into a police state at home and an empire abroad. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives to defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivist oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists. First, you must crush the neocon rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Randus Paulus Spartacus, broadcasting to you from the once shining city on the river, now the burning imperial city. Doctor?
Yes, doctor. And I'm Trog, your co-host. I was just thinking, wasn't Washington, D.C. like a swamp at one time? Maybe that's the problem,
yeah.
Bad air.
Yeah, it was a swamp. They drained it and built the cesspool that is now the imperial city.
Well, I don't even know where to begin or end, but that was a great opening clip, and I'll tell you why. Because it does what it seems like we are able to do, and I don't know why we're able to do this. It has to do, I think, with our worldview. Because there's a lot of things in the conservative, hawkish neocon world I do not relate to. There's a lot of things in the conservative world I do relate to, and there's a lot of things I don't and do relate to in the libertarian world. I'm kind of right down the middle. I don't think I'm any different than I was 5 years ago, 2 years ago before the primary, or anything else like that. I think I'm a little more educated today because I've taken the time to educate myself. But I'm still the same guy. I think if somebody attacks America or one of our real allies, all right, that's a good point right there, but that we should kick ass and take names and come home, you know, and go, don't do it again, or we'll come back and blow the shit out of you and we'd be done with it. And so I don't have a problem with just war. I don't have a problem with a strong military. I'm surrounded by military people where I live. I have tremendous respect for our military. My son, you know, was in Iraq for, I don't know, 2.5 years or some crazy thing like that, trying to teach these guys how to freaking defend themselves. And when he came home, he said, ain't going to happen. Well, look, he was right. Damn, should have put him in the president. But here's the thing, that both you and I work on this constantly, and I know on the group in terms of the threads and what I focus on, is getting to the bottom of the scandal. And I don't care if it's the Syria. I don't care if it was, you know, Rand is one of the few guys that has the balls to literally say, we are funding terrorists. It is mind-boggling that nobody else in the country that I know of, outside of alternative media, has the balls to say that. And it is terrible to think that that's where our tax dollars are going. But I think everybody knows it, but you will never hear it in the media, which means they're complacent, controlled because of the NSA, or they're part of it, and they don't care, and they're part of the global agenda of whatever these insane people think America is supposed to be and, you know, in the world. And I think there's conflicting ideas in terms of people who want an American hegemony, I can't even speak right now, but an American empire where we control everything and we're everywhere, which we kind of pretty much are, and the world's really not very stable for it, or the group that thinks the U.S. is too powerful and it needs to be subservient to a world government. I really believe that you have conflicting issues there between two different groups. They're both wrong. That's the problem. And when I hear people like Perry or Bush or McCain or any of those a-holes come out and attack Rand and call him an isolationist. Let me tell you who's isolating America. The neocons are. Because, as you well know, and I talk about it on the show a lot, I study foreign policy. That's my number one thing. When I wake up in the morning, kick on my computer and grab a cup of coffee, I'm not reading the news of the day, Obama this, Obama that, because I don't give a crap. Not that I don't give a crap, but nothing's going to change because you've got the weakest batch of Republican leadership we've had in a long time, and they're handing him everything he wants, and they won't do anything to stop him. So why am I going to worry about that first thing in the morning? But I love to study what's going on around the world, because if you study the world and you have resources that are not U.S.-based media, because they're, I swear, the talking heads in U.S. media are the stupidest people on the face of the earth. You know, my cat knows more than Sean Hannity does about foreign policy. I mean, it's a joke. He's a joke. I'm sorry. I like Sean Hannity on a lot of things.
Well, come to the dark side.
But he starts going into foreign policy, I'm like going, you shill. You're probably Dick Cheney's pet dog. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just a joke. And what's amazing is in this whole conversation about foreign policy and about the attack on Rand is when you look at what China and Russia and India and this event that just got over, the BRICS conference, you know what President Xi of China does? Every 3 days he's in another country cutting a new trade deal. Now, he isn't moving into other countries like trying to convince him to get his military in there. He's in there doing trade and business. It's the same thing with Russia. It's the same thing with this whole concept of BRICS. You know, their goal is trade and peace. And it's the most mind-boggling thing in the world because you would think that they got that from the USA, 50, 60, 70 years ago. You know, we were the trade nation of the world. Now we're the war-mongering nation of the world. And most Americans, and when you look at the polls and things like that, but most Americans stand behind what Rand is saying. That is, what the hell are we doing, and we need to have a conversation about this foreign policy crap. And yet, 90% of the media, especially Fox and especially the conservative talking heads, you know, Hannity and Levin and the rest of them, even like I said, I love them on some stuff, but I hate them on foreign policy. They're all saying, no, we need to, bomb more and invade more and we need to be involved and we need to stop this, and blah, 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 blah. And, we created this, now we got to stop it. We created this. And now we funded the other bad guys, and now they're the bad guys, so now we got to go stop them. I mean, it's insanity, Rex. And I've said this before. I look at it as evil. I don't know any other way. How can you defeat an enemy and then fund another bad group so you have a new enemy to suck America into? There's something wrong there, seriously wrong. And I hope Americans are asking the tough questions. What in the hell are we doing in the Ukraine? What the hell are we doing funding these guys in Syria? Maybe 12 years ago after 9/11 when we went into Afghanistan and Iraq, some people had their heads screwed on straight and were really questioning what was going on with this war on terror and the Patriot Act. And I can honestly say I was a little bit naive. But we're in a different world today. You can get online and you can find some good sources of people who have very clear thinking, who can articulate themselves well. And when you get through doing the research, you step back going, wow, there's something really nefarious going on here. And it seems like everywhere we look in all these bad issues around the world, there's one country involved. So the question has to be, and I really believe this, is if 2016 isn't about foreign policy and the economy, and it's about all this other crap that people think is important, this country is going to be in serious problems. We're going to be in problems on the world stage. We've got countries, our allies, France is pissed off and saying dump the U.S. dollar after this debacle with Obama and the bank. We've got Germany, looking at America going, are you freaking people insane? We've been doing business with Russia for ever. We have 6,200 corporations doing business in Russia. We don't have a problem with Russia. What the frick is your problem? And we can't afford, you know, why do you think Germany is doing so well? It's the most prosperous country in the EU. They're bailing everybody else out. Well, they have 6,200 companies in Russia doing business, doing trade, doing what America's supposed to be doing. And yet everywhere we turn, it's attack, it's attack, it's attack. It's Putin this, Russia that, India this, China that. You know, the guy that just won the presidential election of India, we had him sanctioned, and now we're kissing his ass. I mean, Rex, come on. You can't make this crap up. He was a governor of a region that had an uprising and a bunch of people got killed, and the U.S. moral police got all pissed off and they sanctioned the guy. Well, now he just won the presidency, so now we're kissing his ass. That's foreign policy? Number one, nobody in the world except for the idiots in the Senate think that sanctions are a viable political tool. People are sick to death of it. They're sick of the U.S. coming in and telling you got to change your laws. If you want a loan from the IMF, oh, you got to have gay marriage. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, they come in with money and they tell you that you've got to change your culture. You've got to change your country. You've got to change your immigration policy. Guess what? The world's getting sick of it. Now, whether you think it's right or wrong, the world is done. We are losing allies fast. And don't tell me it's just Obama, because that whole Bush era started it. And it goes back before that, too. Yes, we can go back and back and back and back. But just in terms of today's political climate. So we have this situation where we are at a tenuous point. Our economy has not grown in the last 5.5 years, 4.5 years. Nothing's changed. The only reason that we have an economy is the Fed has printed $4.5 trillion and infused it into our system. And then they printed some, $13 trillion and slipped it out the back door and infused it into the European system so that we would have, you know, basically exporting our inflation. Everything our world is built on is different than what this country was built on and the prosperity this country is built on. And these neocon assholes want to get us into war and pick on somebody like Rand, who says we need to have a sane conversation about what the hell America's doing in the world. And I think most people in America agree with it. And when you see the people on the left siding with Rand, I mean, I think a lot of people in the country are standing up going, you know what? Our country needs taken care of. We have a border wide open. You know, you talked about the diseases. We have, like, the pneumonic plague showing up in Colorado. You know, they're, like, going, we haven't had this in this country. We don't even have vaccines for it because it's been gone for so long. You know, we got shit going on in this country. This country is in serious economic trouble, and there is a correction coming. Everybody I read and study and follow, and everybody you read and study and follow, you know, say the same thing. And these are people who predicted the last one and the one before that. They are very brilliant people. They know what's going on in the U.S. They know what's going on in the world. So there's this thing coming down the pike, and all these neocons can do is try to figure out how to get us in a freaking war with Russia. Are you freaking kidding me? You know, Russia, who's been doing trade and business in Europe for the last 20 years, everybody was fine with Russia until we went in and toppled Ukraine and started poking the bear in the eye. Now we're poking China in the eye. We have half a trillion dollars a year of trade deficit to China. They sit on $1.3 trillion of our debt, and they have over $3 trillion of our trade deficit. If they dump that money tomorrow, let's say they dumped $1 trillion tomorrow, you know what would happen here? We'd be up the creek, and we're poking them in the eye. You know, these people are insane. Either they want to destroy America, or they're so stuck on stupid of the past global empire of the USA around the world that they just can't get it to their mind that they need to stop, pull in, and have some serious rethinking about what America is, what we need to do to secure our country, and where we should be involved in the world, and what the hell we are doing around the world. Because I can tell you, like I say, I study foreign policy all day, every day. we're pissing people off, and we're pissing the wrong people off. And you can go, you know, you get the, you know, the high, yeah, but we're the badass America. You know, nukes neutralize all that bullshit. We're not playing around with third world countries anymore that we can go in and blow the shit out of them and then puff our chest up and go, wow, we're bad. You know, we're playing around with countries who can annihilate us as fast as we can annihilate them. What the frick do you think these idiots are doing? So here we are. And it was kind of nice taking a week off, I have to admit. But, you know, this is getting hot out there. You know, you got Israel, you got, you know, the Ukraine bull crap and a false flag situation there. You know, you've got Iraq. You know, it's almost like you don't even hear news about Iraq anymore. You know, and you just ask yourself, what the hell is going on and how are we going to survive this? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And are we going to get some leaders in there and quit putting the same assholes back into power that got us into this place? I mean, you and I started on 2014 midterms in 2012. As soon as Romney stole the primary, you know, we were already talking about how important the midterms were. And we put some of the same warmongering, rhino, neocon creeps right back in power. I just go. And Congress gets, what, a 12% approval rating? And then you put the same people back in power? I mean, you want to talk about stuck on stupid? Voters need to wake the hell up because these people are dangerous. They got us here. And they're going to, and if you keep them in power and you don't get some better people in there, they're going to take us right down the next road. Because all their solution is print money, raise taxes, and another war. And if you disagree with those three things, why would you put them back in power? Because that's their whole mantra. That's their life. That's their career. You can go to Heritage. You can go anywhere and look up their voting record, and you can look at their whole damn career, their voting record, and you can see it right there. Oh, this guy's an idiot. Why would we vote him back into power, i.e. Lindsey Graham, McConnell? You know, come on. You know, people need to wake up because this is serious, and it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter out there. And what you hear in the news, if you watch the news and you're, like, overwhelmed with the three or four things that you're hearing about in the news, somebody like me, I see 15, 20 because I actually research it. So there's my opening. It's that wake-up call, baby. Back to you.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
Yeah.
Planned chaos. That's what this is. What you just talked about is planned chaos. It seems crazy. It seems like we got all these things to respond to, but the fact is that it's all planned chaos. And you brought up, you know, the lefties agreeing with Rand. Well, let's be clear. Number one, they can't afford to cede, you know, their wheelhouse, rhetorically speaking, in the media to a Republican. And, of course, if you notice, the broke bungler of Benghazi is triangulating on Iraq, you know, saying, well, I'd made a mistake back then and trying to seem all reasonable. Just keep in mind something. Between Bush and Obama, the biggest neocon is Hillary. She's the neocon's neocon. So don't buy any of that BS that she's the reasonable one. I mean, you know, people bought the hopey changey bullshit with Obama, and he turned out to be Bush on friggin' steroids. So, you know, give me a break. This is insanity. And here's why, and I really hate talking about this crap, all right? And you said last week was nice to have a week off. Yeah, unfortunately, it cost us as much as being here, except, I guess, in time. But the fact is that, you know, why did Chris and I do this? I mean, we have to. I think, you know, and I don't know how much it costs these days, like $500 a pop for a plasma television. I don't know how many I'd go through a week if I didn't get to vent 2 hours a week here. But, you know, I don't like talking about this stuff because I don't really care. Now, when I say I don't care, I'm talking about politics, all right? You know, personally, spiritually, whatever, that's a whole different matter. But I'm talking about politics, about what our country does as a whole, not what we do as individuals or in our private associations or through church or anything else. But as a country, politically speaking, I could give two shits about the rest of the world. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, especially since Congress has fabricated pretty much back since Wilson, this imperial presidency, and now it's grown so large and so powerful that any idiot community organizer you get in there has this unbelievable power. But the fact is that the presidency has one function and one function only as its principal purpose for even existing: foreign policy. It ain't the economy, stupid. It ain't, you know, domestic tranquility and all that other crap, because these sovereign states did not need one man in charge to figure out how to build our infrastructure and have commerce and trade and all that good stuff. That's irrelevant. The only reason that they created a one-person office of the presidency was because in times of war, you cannot prosecute combat by committee. You can't even have a committee of three, which they contemplated. It has to be the decision of one man, because when it comes down to the point of, do we shoot this plane down? It has American civilians on it, but it's carrying sarin gas and it's coming to our border. You have to have one man to make that decision. When it comes down to the decision of, there's birds in the air, if we don't fire our nukes, we're screwed, it has to come down to the decision of one man. And when you pick that man every four friggin' years, you got to pick somebody who can exercise sound judgment, who understands what it means to make those hard decisions. And you really want a man who abhors war, but is willing, once committed, to abhor it so much that he wants to win it quickly. That's not what we have. You elected a friggin' pansy twice. And before him, yeah, there's no question, W is way more of a man. How long did the wars that he let Cheney launch last? That's what you have to think about. Foreign policy is the only thing that matters when it comes to the president. Period. Don't give me this economy crap. The president's got dick to do with the economy. Oh, you know, raise the debt ceiling. The president wants more money. The president only asks for more money because Congress has agreed to a budget. Now, you can bully them. You can use bully pulpit. But it's only because Congress has agreed to give them a budget that's greater than the revenues coming in this year. So debt is naturally part of the course. Oh, well, but Rex, the president gets to select who's ahead of the Federal Reserve. No, he doesn't. If you understand anything about how that works, and we're going to have mid-show clips, about 15 minutes with a little bit more on economy. We'll get into it in more detail then. But in simple terms, they created these 12 Federal Reserve regions just to appease the rest of the country outside of Manhattan to make them think they had a say. But basically what happens is the private owners of the banking cartel basically give the president a list of, you know, 10 douchebags who would all do the same fucking job for these guys, and they say, pick one. And we go, oh, the president's in charge. No, he's not. The bankers are in charge. So the president has nothing to do with the economy. What he has everything to do with is foreign policy, defense, and national security. That's why the office of commander-in-chief is vested in the civilian president. That's how it works. That's why this is friggin' important. And this whole meme that we're having now, you notice, they just trot them out one after the other. You know, Christie, Santorum, this guy, that guy. This time it's Perry with seven guys, you know, they trotted out of the crypt or whatever to back him up. They're all going after Rand. Why? Because they know damn well that the bulk of this country, from across the political spectrum, agrees with Rand Paul, and they can't quarter that. That's why they're going after him. And I don't care if you like Rand Paul or if you don't like Rand Paul, if you're a fan of Rand Paul or if you like him, or, you know, he's not as libertarian as his father or whatever, any of that crap. I don't care. I'm talking about this one issue. They're going after him on it because it scares the shit out of them that you're getting wise to their game. That's what's happening. And that's why this is important. Little housekeeping. Call the number 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Remember, we broadcast 9 p.m. Eastern Sunday nights, usually. And you can listen to the shows anytime you want by going to blogtalkradio.com/Liberty's Thunder. They all list right there. You click on the title. It opens up in your browser. It plays right in your browser free of charge. I think you got to listen to a 30-second commercial or something like that. You listen anytime. If you go below the scrolling graphics, you right-click on download, you get an MP3, you play it in your MP3-enabled device, you send somebody an email, you burn a CD, you take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Tea Party meetings, your Republican Party meetings, your AA meetings, whatever, just get it out there. Because Chris and I do this. And we pay to do this. We don't make any money doing this. There's no advertising on this show. That's why you get a 20-minute opening clip of stuff you haven't heard or you haven't heard it in context. We play another clip. We're going to do some economy today, which is very, very important. And little as that has to do with the president, it has a lot to do with Congress, and you need to be aware of it. But those are two very, very important issues because pretty much that's about all that the government is really in charge of, foreign policy and creating the structure, the conditions for our economy, not messing with every aspect of it. But we do this because rarely are you hearing this perspective out there. And what is the perspective? The perspective is conservatism, properly understood, American conservatism, which is not libertarianism, and it's not republicanism. And Rand Paul is a conservative. Now, these days, because of the stupidity of the labels and the way they've messed up the language, he even has to qualify it. And he says he's a conservative. He says he's a Republican because he is in the party, and that's the structure that he's using to get what he's doing. But he says he's libertarian-ish. And libertarians go crazy. Like, oh, he's not Ron Paul. He's not a libertarian. You're not going to get a libertarian president. Rand Paul is a conservative. But if you're actually not an ANCAP, not an anarchist, if you're actually a liberty lover, for the most part, you're a constitutionalist, and that's right where Rand is. So we want to thank everybody out there for sharing the show. Keep sharing it. Remember, the shows are available after we air, too. No one knows that this exists. No one knows that Chris and I are doing this unless you tell them. And, of course, there's criticism. You guys are anti-Israel. You guys are libertarians. You guys aren't libertarian enough. You guys are fascists. You guys are Christian fascists. I don't care what the criticism is. Everybody gets criticized. Look what's happening to Rand. Question you have to ask yourself is, what do I believe? What do I stand for? How do I see America? Am I doing my part to get her on track? Because guess what? It's dire. As bad as you think it is, it's worse. As crazy as you think the conspiracies are about what the government's doing, it's worse. And when it falls apart fast. We've been spinning on this for over a century. And when it hits quick. Now, it could be tomorrow. I doubt it. I think they can float this for a while longer. But the bottom line is Americans are not ready because they're conditioned and they're programmed. If you're on the right, you buy all the BS coming out of Fox News. If you're on the left, you buy all the crap coming out of MSLSD and HuffPost and Washington Post and all that crap. The fact is, they're all neocons. Oh, what's wrong with being a neoconservative? That means you're a new conservative. No, it doesn't. It means you're a Trotskyite, globalist, interventionist, anti-American, anti-liberty prick masquerading as a Democrat or more likely a Republican. That's what it is. That's what's happening. What we need as far as our foreign policy goes, and Chris and I are going to talk about this before we get into economy, is we need a defense force that is going to protect America. But we can't be fortress America as we've been accused of. Oh, you're an isolationist. No. Our military is supposed to protect the homeland, which means securing the friggin' borders. What's the point of worrying about the border between Gaza and Israel when we got a border between Mexico and Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Texas that we are not doing anything about? Why bother with a foreign border when you can't even secure your own? That's what is going on. Don't sit there and go, oh, Obama's really bad. Bush did it. Clinton did it. Bush before him did it. And to an extent, although not as bad, Reagan did it. So it's not a new problem. It's just gotten worse. Of course, now they're talking to you about it on TV to get you all freaked out. But the bottom line is, you can't be extracted from the world if you're going to trade with the world. It's a dangerous world. But, for example, like Iran, right? They're going to go nuclear. We have to go and invade. No. You can prevent Iran from going nuclear without invading. You can have surgical military strikes without invading. You can have drone strikes without invading. But you also don't wipe out innocent civilians and get people all pissed off at you. And the other thing is that our military is supposed to keep the airways and the seaways open. If those airways and seaways and outer space even are not open, there is no foreign trade. There is no growing our economy by dealing fairly with other people. So it does have a purpose beyond our own borders. But picking and choosing which dictator, which terrorist state, and which prick we're going to support and then topple and then support and then topple, doesn't do anything other than what Chris told you, which is get people pissed off with us. And most especially when we screw around with the global reserve currency, which we forced everyone to have after World War II, because without us, World War II would have gone to the Nazis. And we imposed our system, and it wasn't all that bad at first, Bretton Woods in 44, but by 71, things have gotten out of control, and now here we are 4 decades later, and it's almost over. And you got to get your head on right. What we need is a resolute, reasonable, thoughtful, peace through strength, not shoot first and worry about the blowback later, foreign policy. That's what Rand Paul is talking about. And pricks like Rick Perry keep calling him an isolationist and then going, well, we got to, you know, be all over the world, we police the world, and we blow up the world, and everybody will respect us. We're stretched too thin. We don't have the money. We got plenty of debt. We don't have the military capacity. But we can retool our force for a 21st century defensive force that keeps the tradeways open without interfering in everybody's private home business. They have to sort it out for themselves. I went off there, Chris. Back to you.
Okay, I'm back. I had to get the mute off there. No, I was my head was spinning there on several points that you made. Here's the thing I don't think people understand. And you said 1971 was a key time because that's when Nixon took us off the gold standard because we had got ourselves tied up in the Vietnam War and we were going broke and people were starting to freak out that the U.S. economy and the world currency was going to be a problem. So they started asking for their gold back. And so Nixon nixed that. Everything changed at that point. Now, of course, we can go back and say everything changed in 1913 with the Fed, yes. But 71 was a key thing to understand all of the interventions and the foreign policy manipulations, propping up dictators while you're financing rebels to take that dictator out that you put in power, blah, blah, blah. And this insanity that we call foreign policy has come to a head. And years, you know, like the BRICS Bank was just formed, and they put $100 billion on the table, and that's just a start because, you know, Russia and China have a lot more money than that laying around because they have low debt and lots of money, and they're cutting trade deals all over the world. But when you look at this, and I encourage people to study this. I have a whole thread on it with thousands of posts on it because it's important because it is a direct competition to the Bretton Woods. You mentioned that too. You know, that system that we put the world under after we finished the World War II. And we came in and said, okay, here we go. This is our system. England, you're no longer in control, and your money's out and ours is in. And that's what the system was set up on. And like you said, it was a good thing for a while, as long as you had moral responsibility with that power. And we also had the Cold War going on, which ended a long time ago for you people who don't understand modern Russia. Maybe you ought to do some research and quit listening to Hannity. And so what we're battling today, and you've said this before, what's the average fiat currency last, what, 27 years or something like that? And we basically have a non-gold-backed fiat currency, which means that people borrow money from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve puts money out there or it sells debt or whatever the case may be. And people will get their hands on that money, you know, call it $1 billion, call it $1 trillion, it doesn't matter, same concept. They will take that money and then they will multiply it as it moves down through the economy. So if you got $1 billion, let's say I'm a bank and I bought $1 billion of fake printed money, you know, at the end of a keyboard from the Federal Reserve at whatever. Right now it's 0%, which is insanity in itself, but let's say it was 2%. Then I would start to move that money. I would multiply it. So all of a sudden I had $10 billion, and then I would move it into the next banking institutes or credit institutes, and then they would all multiply it by 10 and multiply it by 10 and multiply it by 10. And it's the most insane thing, you know, fractional reserve, that you could ever imagine as an economic system. And it works as long as there's no hiccup or there's no challenge to it. Well, the problem is there's always an end to this type of insanity. Rome did it. You know, they took their coins and they started adding other metals to it, you know, so the coins, you know, would multiply out because they were broke. And you tax people and you can only tax them so far. So you have a hidden tax by inflation. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with decades and decades and decades of this. The only reason we've been able to continue to do this and print and have these massive budgets and have this huge central government and everybody gets taken care of and nobody starves in America and all these social programs and this monstrous war machine is that the world reserve currency was the U.S. dollar. And a lot of people don't understand this, but let's say you have a Ford factory in Russia, because there is one, and they needed to get parts from Germany because Germany was machining some parts for them. They would, in the old days, they would convert it to U.S. dollar first and then to Swiss or German francs and then back and back and back. And the reserve currency was always in the middle of that, that U.S. dollar, and the same with the U.S. petrodollar. Well, that was done as kind of a, that's the way it is, number one, and number two, is kind of a, everybody keeps the U.S. dollar healthy. Well, in 2008, in that crash, everybody in the world moved to the U.S. dollar for security. But after 5 years of insanity in this country and nobody working on the underlying problems of the country and all this printing at the Fed and the zero interest rate coming out of the Fed, the world is moving away from the U.S. reserve dollar, and it's actually gone down since the late 90s, and it's gone down and down and down, and the euro is a big competitor to it. The yang is a big competitor to it, and now the whole BRICS nations and all their trade deals, they're doing trade deals saying, screw America. We're tired of American interfering in other people's. We're tired of the wars. We're tired. We're tired. We're tired. You had your chance at the world dominance, and we're sick of what you did with it, and so we're going to move away from that monopolar power, and we're going to have a multipolar power again in this world. That's the battle that's going on right now. And the neocons and the bankers and the neoliberals who basically control this casino, this fake system that's on the verge of collapse because we've had no recovery, are freaking the hell out. That's why you get the pressure on Russia and China and all these other institutes, and that's why you've got the neocons calling for more war, more war, more war, and more interference and more control, because that's all they know. Because they haven't done anything healthy for this country for a long, long, long time. And so the tension's up. And I said it earlier, if we don't get some sane leaders in there that focus on a healthy foreign policy and a healthy economy, then these insane people who got us here are going to take us right off the freaking cliff. Because I don't know, they're either evil or they're insane or they're both, and their egos are too big to recognize that they've failed. They failed the country, they failed the world, and if there isn't some changes involved, the world is going to figure it out on their own. And that's what you learn when you actually shut off Fox News and Hannity and actually do some research and start building some research systems and look at the world through the eyes of the rest of the world instead of, you know, looking out on the world through the eyes of an arrogant American. Because the rest of the world is saying the U.S. won't fix itself and won't quit bombing countries, then what we're going to do is we're going to build our own system, and it's going to be void of U.S. interference. That's what's happening right now. That's what BRICS is about. That's what the CSI, you know, the Central Asia relationship, the Shanghai group, all these big groups are about. And it represents about half the population of the world right now as it stands. So, you know, I don't know. You know, are these guys going to take us to war? I think they're crazy enough to. I mean, just look at the last 12 years. Look at the last 4.5 years under this guy. You know, people don't even have a clue what he's doing. Shit's blowing up all over the world. You know, we got jihad armies now. Damn, let's blow up another country like Libya so all the arms and weapons and, you know, can get out and really make it good, huh? You know, there's got to be some sanity. If there isn't, I don't know what to say. It's going to be an interesting next couple of years. That much I can tell you. Back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've thrown a ton of stuff at you, and I've had some good criticism. We like criticism. I don't like being yelled at because, you know, by libertarians for being a fascist. I don't like being yelled at by liberals for being a far-right wing teabagging legislative arsonist. I don't like being yelled at by conservatives for being a libertarian pollbot. I don't like that kind of criticism because it's friggin' pointless. But I do like the kind of criticism such as, you know, maybe I dropped too many F-bombs. Well, okay, that's fine. That's very possible. I'm trying not to, but sometimes it gets a little heated. And frankly, an F-bomb here or there is the least of our problems when we are dropping real bombs all over the friggin' place. Okay, so get real. Two, tell us what you want to hear, what you want us to talk about. I mean, you know, Chris and I have to come up with these topics every week and try to keep focused, and I really don't want to do the news of the day crap because that's what they use to distract you. This friggin' airplane that was shot down, it could just be a simple mistake that some numbnut, you know, shot down by accident. It could be that there were some Asian provocateurs down there designed to make it look as if it was the Russians so that we can go rah, rah, rah. You know, who knows what the reason is, and you'll probably never find out. You still don't know who killed JFK. You still don't really know what happened on 9/11. You don't know, you know, half the things that happened and most of the false flags you rarely find out about. The real thing to focus on is how will they use it? Well, clearly they've propagandized the Malaysian airliner that was shut down in Ukraine in order to beat up on Putin. Now, Putin's smart, and he's handling it fairly well, so that's neither here nor there, but they're still using it as rah-rah-rah jingoism against Russia. That's what they do. And what you always have to look for is the spin. And if it's the thing that they're talking about, odds are something's going on that they're not talking about. So while they were talking about football and this friggin' airplane and who knows what else, what Chris was telling you happened. The BRICS Bank was a meeting in Brazil. Football was the least important thing going on in Brazil. That's all you paid attention to. Of course, if you're listening to the show, that's not you, but I'm talking about the people you're trying to convince to help repair the country. That's what they were focused on. Well, what is BRICS? BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Now, it's a name that was coined by a Goldman Sachs guy, I think Jim O'Neill, way back in 2000 or something like that. It's neither here nor there. The bottom line is, after World War II, the world was destroyed, except for good old USA. We were standing. We were strong. And so we were able to have 90% tax rates and still have a booming economy. And we were the only ones making stuff, so everybody who wanted stuff had to buy it from us. Over time, that changed. The two countries that we obliterated the most, Germany, well, at least West Germany, and Japan turned into industrial giants. And then the rest of the world has come along. And, of course, under the guise of so-called free trade, they put in all these managed trade agreements. It's a global, interconnected, technological world. We are not going back, and that's a good thing. However, what that means is that we have to outcompete everybody, because we are not the only manufacturer on the block. That's also a good thing, because we're the ones. Remember, the Industrial Revolution kind of got us launched in Great Britain, but let's see who took it to the next level, who brought it up, who delivered the technological revolution. The United States of America. More importantly, the conditions for entrepreneurs and capital to get together and develop these innovations were created here in the United States of America. That's no longer the case, and that's fine. We can outcompete. But see, there are some among us who don't want to outcompete. What they want to do is control. So their solution is you blow up the competition surgically all over the world. You use this guy to kill that guy and that guy to kill this guy, and you consolidate the wealth and the money. And if your fiat scheme is failing at home, you set it up on a global scale. Well, some other countries don't like that, and it's not the United States they don't like. It's not the American people they don't like. It's not even our free market system that we used to have that they don't like. It is the Federal Reserve, neocon, military-industrial banking cartel scheme that they don't like. That's what they don't like. And that is an interest that is captured both wings of the national duopoly of your government. Oh, well, let's go third party then, Rex. Give it a shot. I mean, I really wish that there was an opportunity for that, but let me tell you something, all you alternate third-party independent people like me, I'm not a friggin' Republican, it's not going to happen. And your energies are far better off not promoting a candidate or a party, but changing the ballot access, the voting rules, the way it's set up at your state level. That's how you're going to open it up. You're not going to open it up by pushing a candidate. You're playing on the field of rules set by the Democrats and the Republicans. They lie and steal and cheat anyway. You've got to change it from the ground up so that we can have more competition instead of either a D or an R, a jackass or a Republican. That's what you have to focus on. But until that happens, we can't just sit back and focus on that. We have to do something. We got someone like Rand Paul who's making sense, who's speaking about sanity, who sounds more like Ronald Reagan than any of the other Republicans, in the Republican Party. Does that mean you should become a Republican? I don't know. You have to make that call. Luckily, in my Commonwealth, I don't have to be a Republican to participate. If you do, you got to make that call. But the bottom line is you can still support him even if you aren't going to get in on the party. That's what kind of has to be done. The primaries were supposed to be the Tea Party Liberty Movement surge. It didn't happen. Yeah, okay. We busted our humps in Virginia 7th. We got rid of Eric Cantnot. All they did was move the number 3 douchebag up to his slot. And then they gave you a Tea Party favorite, Steve Scalise. Bullshit. He's the guy who fired one of the champions up there in the Republican study group. You got to pay attention to this stuff. We can't cover everything, but if you want to know what we're talking about, you go to our page on Facebook, Liberty's Thunder, and you like the page, interact with the page, you'll get notifications when we're broadcasting. When you see the pick for the show, if you click on it, every article and every clip we use is right there in the comments. And I also, we have them pretty much throughout the week. We work on it in Chris's group, Liberty's Talk on Facebook. So get in there. Make sure you share the show. Make sure you tweet it out there. Make sure you do the best thing possible, which is give someone a personal invite. You don't have to agree with everything we say. We're simply trying to get you to do is think about things in a different perspective. Get beyond the labels. Get off your favorite friggin' issue. It's not going to work. Electing a pro-life president is not going to reverse Roe v. Wade. Electing a guy who smoked pot, whether he inhaled or didn't inhale, ain't going to get you your favorite drug legalized somewhere. Okay? This is not going to happen. What you need to do is focus on the things that actually matter. Foreign policy. Trade. The economy. The president's not going to fix the economy. I don't want him to fix the economy. What I want him to do is get rid of the Federal Reserve along with Congress. Not get rid of Congress, but Congress has to get rid of the Federal Reserve. And let's start having a free market again because we will outcompete. Will it hurt for a while? Sure. But that's okay. Sometimes pain's a good motivator. But look at what happened by avoiding the pain, by extending the Band-Aid, as Chris said. Instead of being 3 years into a real recovery, we're almost 6 years into an anemic shrinkage that is called a recovery. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. I got a clip with Schiff and Rick Santelli this week, which, remember, Rick Santelli is kind of the guy that publicly, at least, kind of launched the Tea Party by yelling that we need a Tea Party here on the floor of the exchange. He had a meltdown this week with these idiots. And a little bit of Pepe Escobar talking about BRICS, which is very, very important because these people are deciding that they want to trade in currencies other than our own because they're sick of the way things are going. And I don't blame them one bit. I'm sick of the way it's going, too. But the difference is we live here, and I don't want to be impoverished because of the Federal Reserve and somebody deciding that they want to kick it in the pants. What I want is a commodity-backed U.S. dollar and unleash our economy because we can outcompete anybody else on the world stage. We just need the conditions to do it like we used to have. And it isn't about going back to 1912 or 1776. It's about going forward in the 21st century with the right conditions so that the American people, the American entrepreneur, and the real American capitalists, and the real American hard workers can innovate, produce, and outcompete everybody on the planet. If you don't understand how the Federal Reserve works, research it. Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. Dr. Ron Paul's book, and the Fed. Very good intermediate, actually it's kind of even a beginner's start with a lot of references if you want to get into it deeper. But in simple terms, if you want to understand the Federal Reserve, it's a very simple concept. This isn't, you know, economics here. You should know all that stuff. But if you don't have time or you haven't heard it before, you look at a clock, right? There's a clock. There's 24 hours in a day divided into 60 minutes per hour. If I suddenly decreed by fiat, meaning that just by legislative action or executive action or whatever you want to call it, that all of a sudden every hour has 120 minutes in it, do you really think there would be 48 hours in a day? Is the sun going to set 24 hours later and then rise again? No. Reality hasn't changed. And when the Federal Reserve prints more money, just because they printed $1 trillion does not mean that our economy generated $1 trillion of wealth. All it means is that they shoved more minutes into an hour. So what happens if you got 120 minutes in an hour and you still have a 24-hour day? Each minute is now worth 30 seconds. The more minutes you have, the less time you got per interval. The more money you have, the less each unit is worth. That's what they are doing. They are robbing you blind while you still have the same number of dollars in your pocket that are now worth half as much. Oh, well, inflation hasn't hit yet. Well, in some ways it has. But the numbers Chris was talking about in the trillions, no, it hasn't. But it's about to. We're going to get into that clip now, but I'm going to let Chris have a go at it first. And if you want to talk to us on the other side of this, 646-649-1013, 646-649-1013. And remember, if you're listening live, and a bunch of you are right now, at 11 p.m. Eastern in about 40 minutes, your browser will cut you off and you cannot hear anymore. If you want to listen live, you have to call in on your handset and listen on your handset. The browser won't work. If you're listening in podcast or on the Internet, just keep scrolling. We'll probably wrap it up sometime around 11:30, 11:45. So before we get to the BRICS Santelli shift clip, you want to throw something on that, Chris?
Say that fast three times, Santelli shift. Yeah, you know, we are at a major change point. And I like what you said, and that is it doesn't have to be a negative. The only reason it's a negative is because the idiots that run our country are making it a negative. They're not addressing the budget. They're not addressing the overexpenditures. They're not addressing the waste and fraud. They're not addressing our border. They're not addressing protecting America, you know, the things they're responsible for. And so what happens is we've got this churn and this confusion and this floating economy, you know, because the Fed keeps printing money and dumping it into the system, and you have, you know, the big corporations and the bank consolidating more and more and more power. It's just, I mean, when you look at the stock market, most of the stock market is just people buying up more and more of the same stuff, and it's consolidating. We have more power into less corporations than we've ever had before. For you people who are anti-fascist or anti-corporatist, we have more power in the federal government than we've ever had. You know, it just keeps consolidating into a handful of people. We have more money and power into a smaller number of banks, and we have more power and influence and in the media than we've ever had before. Six whole corporations control it all. We are at a point where I believe people feel it, but I don't think a lot of people understand it because it's a lot of things going on at once. But it really boils down to two things. It boils down to the economy. It boils down to foreign policy. It really does. Because the knee-jerk reaction to all the insanity that's going on domestically is the insane things we're doing in foreign policy. So they really tie together. And foreign policy is affected or is a knee-jerk reaction to bad economics. Bad economics is a knee-jerk reaction to bad foreign policy. They tie together. Two of the most important topics, especially going into 2016. I would have hoped they would have been more important going to 2014, but, you know, the Republicans and the media, they just played the Obama this, Obama that, Obama this, Obama that game, you know, and put, you know, a lot of the same jerks right back into power. So, you know, it's almost done. A couple more primaries, and I hope these guys do well. Some of the got some decent guys out there. But here's the thing, and on the positive and the negative, if we don't change direction, it's going to be a negative. If we change direction, then we can compete in this changing world. Because sooner or later, the reserve currency, you know, we're going to be 50%, and then we're going to be 40%. And these alternate currencies and the EU or the euro and the BRICS nations, they're going to keep growing. They're the only growing economies in the world. You know, and the BRICS in the thing, and we'll get into this on the other side, so I don't want to go too deep into this, but there's hundreds of corporations knocking on the doors right now of the BRICS consortium. And BRICS is just being very careful, very slow, the way they're putting things together. And you know, like at the conference in Brazil, there was 11 other South American nations that were there as guests. So there are a lot of people, you know, paying attention to this. And, of course, you won't hear anything about it in media because nobody wants you to know the truth, because they want you to be controlled by evil Russia. Oh, we got to go back to Iraq. Oh, evil Assad in Syria. Oh, evil Palestinians. You know, they got to control your mind with crap that really is just a knee-jerk reaction to real problems that nobody's dealing with. And so they don't want to tell you the truth. They don't want you to be educated. You know, most of the major investors are already moved out of the U.S. economy. A lot of people don't know that. I mean, it's right there on the Internet. Read the damn articles. You know, even Soros, he's moved a lot of his money out of this economy because they know something's coming. And so, anyway, I don't want to go too deep in this because you got a good clip to play. So give her hell, Harry.
We'll get to Santelli Schiff, and Escobar in just a second. It's a 15-minute clip, but it is important, so listen. And the reason that you're getting 2.5, almost 3 hours of show with no advertising is Chris and I aren't making money doing this. Does that make us stupid or crazy? Well, we might be crazy, but no, it's done for a reason. All right, we don't do this as a money-making thing. We've both got other stuff going on in our lives. We do this because it's important and because you need to listen and you need to understand, and the most important thing you can do is inform and educate yourself, know what you believe, know what you stand for, and have a plan of how you're going to go about doing it. And then you have to create a force multiplier. You need to swell our ranks. It does not take much to win an election. It does not take much to change a policy. It does not take much to overcome the algorithms and the computers. It just requires a large enough gap between the candidates, which is often had with a 2 to 3% turnout. Look what happened in Mississippi. Thad Cochran, Haley Barbour, Karl Rove, and all those other rhino pricks, all right, they got paid and they lied and they cheated and they stole and they got enough Democrats not to come over because of conservative principles, but to come over in order to protect their Democratic freebies to vote for Thad Cochran, and he won by 6,500 votes. Now, McDaniels is challenging that, and I think that it is a very strong case, and he might be able to pull it off, but the simple fact is it doesn't – look what happened in Virginia. All right, we unseated Eric Cantnut with hard groundwork, grassroots, turning out people to vote for Dave Brett. It can be done, but only if you increase the ranks. What you have is people who are like, well, I won't vote for a candidate who's not pro-life, or I won't vote for someone who's not going to legalize sodomy, or I stand with Israel. Let me break something to you. Israel is not part of the United States of America, okay? Worry about this country. Let Israel figure out what to do about itself. You heard Rand Paul, all right? They're a sovereign nation. They can take care of themselves. Right, let them, okay? It is not our problem. Now, you might have personal feelings, you might have religious feelings, that's fine and good, but that is not a national political issue. That is a personal issue. Do something about it on your own time. But as a country, we got bigger problems. So quit picking your favorite issue and your favorite douchebag candidate and fighting with everybody else on your side about all these stupid things and you know, all right, Rand Paul's not Ron Paul, blah, 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 okay? That's a waste of time. We agree in broad principles, so focus up on those things. We've got a lot of primaries coming up in August. We got Michigan coming up on the 5th, Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, Washington. Thursday the 7th is Tennessee, Saturday the 9th, Hawaii. Then we got August 12th, Connecticut, Minnesota, South Dakota, Tuesday the 19th, Alaska, Wyoming, the 26th, Arizona, Florida, Vermont, and I think there's a special in Oklahoma. And then Guam, you know, Saturday the 30th. That was really important. I want everybody to focus on Guam. I'm kidding. But the point is that it's happening. It's not all lost. The primaries aren't over. They're not talking about it anymore because they've got all this stuff to put in your face about airplanes crashing and this fabricated Islamic State, which doesn't exist, and they're not the caliphate, and all it is a CIA Mossad operation and Muslim Brotherhood operation to get you to focus on the wrong things. Stop falling for this crap. This is America. Fix America. Our standing in the world will be improved dramatically if we actually have a strong military, but we're not going to have a strong military for long if we have all this debt. And if we have competing monetary schemes, that's not good for anybody. We need to restore sound money. So here's the 15-minute clip. We'll be back on the other side. Pay attention.
Discussion, argument, between Steve Leisman and Santelli, although it's not really between Leisman and Santelli. It's really between Santelli and pretty much everybody else. I mean, Steve Leisman is just speaking for the conventional wisdom here, the conventional ignorance, rather, is probably a better word than wisdom. And Paul Krugman has already chimed in on Leisman's side to criticize Santelli. So let's just go over all these cuts. The first one is where Santelli has been saying, look, the Fed should let interest rates go up, and Leisman doesn't understand why that would be helpful. Here is that discussion, cut number 10A.
He should do?
If I concede every point Rick makes, he still cannot explain to me how higher interest rates brings about better economic outcomes.
Because if I'm a bank, why would I lend to some person at a sub-risk reward rate just
because
Rick,
you are lending, presumably, you're lending
higher interest
based
rates
on the
would
real
follow
rate.
A better economic outcome.
What's that?
Presumably higher interest rates would follow
would
the
follow better,
better
economic,
economic
but they wouldn't
outcome.
Lead better economic
no, I
income.
Think it actually
if the
will
issue,
cause
Rick, is capital investment,
revolution.
The issue is capital investment. What you don't want to do is raise the hurdle rate for capital investing. You just complained about the idea
no, the
of CEOs.
The capital will come out if it can get a decent return.
But that decent return has very little.
See, so it would Leisman could have come up, not Leisman, Santelli could have had a better answer. First of all, Leisman is talking about we need low interest rates for capital investment. What he doesn't understand is we're not getting capital investment. That's the problem. Capital investment has collapsed with these low interest rates. Low interest rates are fueling speculation. They're fueling excess consumption. They are propping up bloated sectors like housing or the financial sector to the detriment of capital investment. See, what Steve Leisman doesn't understand is, yes, if interest rates were to go up in the short run, we would burst the bubbles in the housing market and the stock market, and we'd have a severe recession. But that is not a problem. That is productive pain. But Steve Leisman doesn't understand the difference. And Rick Santelli really needs to point out, look, yes, if we raise interest rates, the party's over. Yes, if we take away the punch bowl, then the people who are drunk are going to sober up and realize how much trouble they're in. But if you're talking about a real recovery, a precursor, a requirement to a legitimate recovery is that we put an end to the phony one. If we allow interest rates to rise, then we will get the financial, the capital investment that Santelli is talking about. I mean, that Leisman is talking about. Because the speculation will cease. The Federal Reserve right now is redirecting money that otherwise would go to capital investment, and now it's being used to finance as financial speculation. And what we need is more savings. And we're not going to get more savings with 0% interest rates because nobody would save. And we're not going to get real, legitimate capital investment until we have more savings. And so all that is going to require higher interest rates, which is going to be problematic in the short run to a phony economy addicted to cheap money. So I got to grant that. What Santelli has to say is that, yeah, we'll have some short-term pain, but the result will be long-term gain. What Leisman wants to do is continue the monetary heroin to the point of overdose and complete destruction of the economy. Here's cut number 10B.
There's a big debate, and there's an important debate as to how much slack is in the economy. And there are people on both sides who say, that there's less slack than the Federal Reserve believes. It's well to remember.
Why do we debate
that a lot
it? Why don't
people,
we let the market tell us?
A lot of people.
Okay, you tweak rates, you get bad feedback, you tweak them the other way. What is wrong with some
Rick,
mental flexibility?
Rick,
that's
I'm sorry.
The highest form of intelligence.
But the general consensus of the economic community right now is to reject
consensus.
What you're talking about.
I don't care that Europe offers
that
entitlement.
If you put this on
we're America. We don't believe in consensus.
They also reject
we
talking over people,
consensus.
But that's another story.
Well, I would have liked to have said, who cares about what the general consensus is about economists, about anything? Because they're wrong. The general consensus of economists leading up to the 2008 financial crisis was that we had nothing to worry about, that the housing market was fine. Right? That there was no bubble, that the economy was Goldilocks, that there was no recession anywhere on the horizon. So the conventional wisdom when it comes to economists like Steve Leisman is wrong because there's no wisdom in the consensus. It's a lack of wisdom. It's it's the opposite. But there's a lot of good stuff here in this discussion or argument. Here, cut number 11.
The general idea, Rick, is that if you put this on autopilot, the market will not take care of it.
I don't want a general idea. I want the Fed to be a banker. A banker. Tweak rates a little up and down. Crisis over. The Congress shouldn't allow them to keep going with crisis management.
We got your point, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, the overlying point that he's trying to make here is that the Federal Reserve is still operating as if there was a crisis because it's got interest rates at zero, which was a level that was deemed necessary in the crisis, and they're doing QE, which was something that they didn't even do originally, but they're doing all this QE. But if the economy is not in crisis, if the economy is 5 years into a self-sustaining economic recovery, why is the emergency medicine still being applied in the same, if not an even larger dose than when the patient was first ill? Nobody can answer that question. And Janet Yellen will keep saying, well, we have to maintain this highly accommodative policy. Why? Why do we have to maintain it? The reason is because without it, the economy implodes because what we're seeing and feeling is not real. It is all artificial. But here's going to be the problem. When the collapse finally comes, you know, they're going to say, "Oh, nobody could have seen this coming. Nobody could have seen it coming, right? Oh, Rick Santelli or Peter, oh, he was just a stop clock because he's been warning about it for years." They're not going to realize that this phony recovery and the economic monetary policy behind it is going to be the reason for the next crisis. But because it takes years to unfold, they can't connect the dots, and they think that anybody who saw it early and warned about it was just
doing these kinds of things, Scott. But if they hadn't have done it, where would we be now, 5 years on? We're in great shape.
We'd be healing 3 years into a recovery. That's what I say. Disprove it.
Rick, you're trying to get another round of applause here? Because at the end of the day, without the Fed, we would be in bad shape right now. And the way I look at it, Rick, is that let the job get done. Tapering is almost done, then let the market get 6 months.
It's not Janet Yellen's job.
And it's all about one thing. It is about patience. And patience is going to get this job done. So I'm
a
big fan of what she's doing, and the job is going to get done.
So the big point is...
See, they're trying to say, well, what would the economy be like if we didn't have the Fed? And Santelli's making the point, yeah, we might be 3 years into a real recovery instead of 5 years into a phony recovery. So he's acknowledging that the recession might have gone on for a couple of years longer, but it might have been a productive recession that would have purged the economy of all the imbalances that were built up because of prior bad monetary policy. The economy would have restructured. Yes, we would have taken more short-term losses, but now we would be 3 years into a real recovery instead of 5 years into a phony recovery. The difference is a real recovery is self-sustaining and lifts all boats, and a phony recovery sows the seeds of its own destruction and only lifts the boats of a few people temporarily at the expense of everybody else. That is the difference. And now this guy's saying, well, let's end QE. Yeah, when you end QE and the Fed tries to raise rates and this whole thing collapses, you know, then you see the damage the Fed has done, except very few people understand that the damage is because of the Fed. They're going to think it's because of some other factor, that what the Fed did was just immaterial. That's a coincidence, that we just happen to have another 100-year flood so soon after the last 100-year flood. When they don't think the Fed had anything to do with blowing up the dams and causing the floods. Here, cut number 13.
Hey, Rick, you already decided this wasn't going to work 5 years ago. Is some of your confirmation bias?
Right.
You were
right, Rick.
What were you right on?
Rick, it's impossible. Rick, it's
you already decided this would
Rick,
work.
It's impossible for you to have been more wrong, Rick. Your call for inflation, the destruction of the dollar, the failure of the U.S. economy to rebound. Rick, it's impossible for you to have been more wrong. Every single bit of advice you gave would have lost people money, Rick. Lost people money, Rick. Every single bit of advice.
No, well, he never told people to short stocks. I never did. We've been selling. What is he wrong about? The stock market went up. The real estate market went up. So what? I said those markets were going to go up. I said that QE would cause asset prices to rise. But what I also said is it wouldn't cause an economic recovery. And we don't have one. I don't care what the GDP says. Talk to the average person. There is no recovery. They've got no job. And if they have a job, it's part-time. Prices are rising faster than wages. The labor force participation is collapsing. People are piled under mountains of debt. The homeownership is at generational lows. Kids are trapped at home with their parents. They can't afford to move out. I mean, this whole economy is imploding, and Rick Santelli was right. It didn't work. It hasn't worked. Just because it's propped up stock prices doesn't mean it's worked. And by the way, I've said all along, I've said that stock prices were going to go up. Why? Because the Fed was going to keep printing money. It's not going to be because of a good economy or because of good earnings. It's going to be because of inflation, and that's exactly what has happened. Now, Steve Liesman is saying, but the dollar hasn't collapsed. We haven't had hyperinflation. Yeah, we haven't had those things yet, but what if we have those things eventually?
That's a better strategy than the Cubs. Wait till next year isn't the way to go.
There is no piece of advice that you've given that's worked, Rick. Not a single one.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Paul Richards,
not a single one, Rick.
To do her job or his job.
Not a single one. The higher interest rates never came. The inability of the U.S. to sell bonds never happened. The dollar never crashed, Rick. There isn't a single one that's worked for you.
Paul Richards, I'll give you the last word.
Is patience. You let the Fed continue to do their job and all is going to be fine. Be long equities going into tomorrow's cut.
Yeah, just be patient. Everything's going to be fine. No, everything's not going to be fine. Right? We're going to be patient and we're going to find that the light at the end of the tunnel is the oncoming train. But again, this idea that everything that he said has been wrong, that's what's wrong. It's the people who thought QE was going to work that have been wrong because it hasn't worked. Yes, it's propped up stock prices, but people who were critical of QE like me never said that the stock market was going to go down because of QE. I always said that QE would cause stock prices to go up. So what? I said that it would cause real estate prices to go up, but I also said that these would be bad things, that rising asset prices as a result of QE would undermine a legitimate economic recovery, and that is exactly what happened.
This morning. How big a rival is it going to be, really, though, to the IMF or the World Bank end of the day? Real stuff or wishful thinking?
No, look, it's a long and winding road, and it starts now. Look, the first BRICS summit was in Yekaterinburg in Russia 6 years ago. Now we have facts on the ground, on the airwaves, and all over the world. This is the, I would say this is the beginning of the implosion of the 1944 Bretton Woods Agreement. This is a development bank by emerging powers. It's based on the Brazilian Development Bank. Many of these beautiful stadia that you see during the World Cup, they were financed by the Brazilian Development Bank. So it's financing of infrastructure by the BRICS themselves, among themselves in five countries. Then they can start lending to other countries as well. They can help to industrialize Africa in the long run. And without all these conditions imposed by loans by the IMF and the World Bank. So it is an earth-shattering development.
No so problem. What's reaction going to be from the U.S. and the EU?
Well, I'm waiting for the reaction, especially from Wall Street and the City of London. In fact, the City of London, they had some investment analysts already writing columns in British media saying, this is a flash in the pan, this is nothing. Of course, it's a a model of incentivizing productive capitalism against casino capitalism as is practiced by the Western financial system, Wall Street, City of London, people laundering money everywhere, etc. So the BRICS, they have been thinking about this, I would say, closely, at least for the past 2 years. We need a different model from the IMF and the World Bank to our emerging economies, to emerging economies in South America, in Southeast Asia, for instance, in India and in Africa. And we need to boost investment and investment infrastructure, especially with conditions that these countries can afford. So when I see at Africa in the long term, and this is just the beginning, $100 billion, which can be expanded, Russia and China especially, they can add much more funds to. Yes.
I was going to say, Pelikas, I was going to say the BRICS has got an iron expansion, further expansion too, maybe Argentina next. What after that, do you think?
Look, Indonesia was, or Turkey, they thought they could have joined the BRICS 1, 2, 3 years ago. This is a gradual thing. Soon we're going to have the so-called mint countries like Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria, South Korea, even Iran, which is one of the future regional powers, very important regional powers. They will join, and this is going to become an alternative IMF and an alternative World Bank as well. It's the beginning of a gradual transformation of the international financial system. What was thought about in 1944 cannot apply to 2014. It's a completely different situation. And finally, countries in the emerging world, in fact, in the global south, are getting their act together in acts and deeds and not just rhetoric. So, of course, the old hegemonic
be patient, all is well. Just hold on to your shorts. I don't know who that Australian douchebag was, but Santelli was fired up, and Santelli was right. You heard Schiff analyze it, and then you heard from Pepe Escobar about BRICS and Minsk. Look, it's real simple. Stock prices are up. Even real estate prices in some markets are up. And half of Americans do, in fact, own stock. So that should be good for everybody, right? But it doesn't mean it's a good economy. The fact is, most Americans who own stock own it inside their government-controlled plans, like a 201K. Oh, you thought you had a 401K? You don't, right? Because the Dow at 17,000 today, if you were to measure it in 2007 dollars, would need to be somewhere around 34,000 to 38,000, and it's not. So you actually have less wealth. You just have more numbers on your piece of paper, and you think that that's a win. When it comes crashing down, and it will, you won't get a bailout. You won't get a Wall Street bonus. It'll come crashing down, and the rich will get richer. Well, not the rich, just the 0.01% of the rich, the uber transnationals, globalists that are connected into this scheme. This is not free market capitalism. This is corporatism. This is crony capitalism. This is casino capitalism. It has nothing to do with free markets. It's not how we built America. All right? Now, the economy is generally an electorate's number one issue. Why? Because we feel it. When we go to the grocery store, when we go to the gas station, and let's be clear, some of that, 369, which is twice as high as it was when Obama got into office, gas is still relatively cheap given the inflation. In Europe, they pay something like $11 a gallon for it. And we have more oil and gas than anybody else. We're going to become a net exporter in the next few years. We're going to have a lot of money. And if you elect the wrong people, all we're going to get is more socialism, more corporatism. We're not going to get a free market. But people feel the economy directly, so that's the issue they play on, right? But it's a scheme. It is a fiat money paper house of cards scheme that they use to actually invisibly take wealth away from you, the poor and the middle class and the wealthy who were not uber wealthy, and transfer it to them. And that consolidates power, and it lets them buy government, and it lets them fund foreign wars. We don't feel the foreign wars unless we have a relative or a loved one in the theater, and even then most of them do come home, so we don't feel it. But people over there do. They don't like it. They're getting pissed. they're blaming us. And if someone comes along and says, hey, we have an economic system that pushes the USA aside and they won't be able to bomb you anymore, they're going to jump on that. And then it's going to become an even more dangerous world for us instead of a world in which we are trading and innovating and making money and making friends. And, yes, we will have enemies. There will always be enemies, and we will have to kill them. But we don't have to create more enemies. There's enough of them already. That's the problem. And that is why you have to have somebody who can articulate this message over and above the left-stream media. And it can't be we put up a guy who looks exactly like their gal, whether it's Lizzie or Hillary or whatever, all right, and you put up a tepid little wussy mealy-mouthed prick like Romney or Bushy or Christie or some douchebag like that. You need to put up somebody who's going to fight and who's going to explain it and who's going to get a message across to people about how a real economy works and how a real defensive foreign policy works that makes friends and supports our friends and kills our enemies instead of making enemies and screwing our friends, which is what we've got going on right now. That's what you need. And believe it or not, this discussion between Governor Rick Perry with his new hipster glasses and Senator Rand Paul is exactly about that, because Rand Paul talks about a resolute, strong, peace through strength, non-interventionist. It's not isolationist. It's not interventionist foreign policy. And he talks about a sound money system that eliminates the Federal Reserve, eliminates the IRS, and puts us back on a commodity-based standard where our free market will be the number one market, because we are capable of doing that. And we don't need to secure it through fake machinations and corporatism, and that doesn't benefit most of us anyway. And a new word was introduced there. Chris talks about BRICS all the time, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and now they're talking about Minsk. So to you, Chris, if you want to chime in on that.
That was a great, great rant there. You were pretty calm, but I like it when you talk about economics, because you explain it well, and it can be very confusing to people. I've learned a lot talking and listening to you over the last couple of years and then going and doing my own research. The BRICS thing is huge, and I really wish more people would partake in the conversation of it, because it's huge, because if you look at Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, not South America, as I put on my stupid picture I can't change, it's a huge chunk of the world. And then you look at the CSI contract, which is the Russia and the Stan, you know, Kazakhstan and these other countries, and then you look at China on the east and their concept or their vision to rebuild the old Silk Road across Central Asia all the way to Europe, and some of the deals that they're cutting and the investments they're making, including countries like Pakistan and Afghanistan, and you know, Russia's position with their former Soviet, you know, relationships that they have in the Stan countries. This is freaking huge. And I've done massive research on it. I could do a whole show just on, you know, the emerging markets and where they're going. And I know that Schiff is really big in emerging markets and his investment company. And it's really good to get anything from Richards and some of the rest of them, because these guys look at the world through a world view and what's going on. And where these markets are going. You know, everybody knows that the money's gone east, and it hasn't just gone east, because this is what people don't understand about Russia. Well, let's put it this way. Most people don't have a flipping clue about Russia, period, and they don't even know that, you know, when you go to eastern Russia, that you look at that land that comes down the side of China and actually reaches and touches North Korea. And if you look right across the ocean or across the bay, so to speak, you're looking at Japan, northern Japan. So Russia spans 9 time zones and has more natural resources than anybody knows about. I mean, they have resources they haven't even begun to tap or investigate. They're just with the new deal they cut with China and some of these other things that they're doing, you know, those are stuff that they're setting on, you know, looking for the right market to move it into. And so this new energy deal, because the problem with China, they got workers and they got factories, you know, like we used to have. And but they don't have a lot of natural resources. So resource-rich, you know, countries like Russia and Iran and those countries, which is also doing business with China, and Iraq and even Saudi Arabia is doing business with China now. In fact, China is about doing business with everybody around the world. Pretty soon they're not going to need that $500 million a year that they do with the U.S., and things might change. So this is huge. And in your research, when you study the Russian side of BRICS, you'll find that Putin or the Russian government has forgiven tens upon tens upon tens of billions of dollars to old post-Soviet debt that countries like Cuba, North Korea, whatever, even countries in South America, owed Russia. They forgave the debt. Okay, if you don't think they're serious about what they're doing and where they're going with these trade deals and this integration of BRICS, you know, you don't find countries writing off $50, $60 billion of debt with other countries very often, and it's big. Well, why are they doing it? Because they're on this BRICS move, especially, you know, the key players are Russia and China. And, you know, and these new deals and pipelines. See, one of the things that the U.S., especially the neocons and bankers and the energy industry, fears is pipelines. Because even though pipelines are an initial investment, once that pipeline is paid for, then you've got maintenance costs, and then your gas is all profit. And when you do LNG, like the U.S. is going to have to do to get these markets, it's a much more expensive game. You have to build, you know, you have to have the terminals, you have to have the ships, you have to have the terminals on the other side, and you've always got the shipping costs in between. And this is one of the biggest reasons that the new old Cold War has been reenacted with Russia, is because their pipeline system, if you go online and actually research it, it's freaking monstrous. It looks like a telecommunication system. And they're going to be building it right through China, right down into India, and right across the whole Silk Road concept from China all the way to Turkey and beyond. And this is the game that's being played out on the world. The U.S., and you say this, and you say it very well, the U.S. has the ability to compete, but for some reason, because of our politicians and our bankers and our corporatism or fascism, if you want to look at it that way, they don't want to compete. They want to bully, they want to use debt, and they want to maintain a position of superiority or power through the manipulation or the arrogance of the military and the debt. And what's happened is, especially with the BRICS formation, is you've got countries that are saying, hey, we're not going to be like interfering with your country, we're not going to be telling you to change your damn laws, we're not going to be forcing you to have gay marriage, we're not going to be forcing you to, you know, open your damn borders, we're, you know, like they did in Europe or the U.S., we're not going to force you to do anything. What we want to do is we want to trade. We have something you need, you have something we need, you have a market, and they are also investing tens upon tens upon tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of investment into these countries in the development, especially in these emerging and pre-emerging markets, countries that are almost depressed. You know, South America, all the stuff that's going on in South America, Africa, China and Africa's China and South America, plus, you know, whatever Russia's doing, is they're investing. That's part of what this BRICS bank is about. This new bank is about lending money to countries to help them get their infrastructure built so we can bring them up to the 21st century, and then they're a viable partner and a viable consumer base. It's all about everything that you think America should be about. And that's why it's so popular. That's why and we're talking about from concept. When Putin sat down and thought about what can, you know, Russia do in the future and who can we partner with, you know, and when they went 10 years ago and started meeting with the Chinese, because anybody thinks the Russians and the Chinese have been friends, they've been like enemies forever. Well, 10 years ago, they sat down and said, look, let's become friends and let's build a better world, and let's do business together, and let's deal with all of our old issues, from borders to everything else. And they ironed out their problems, and they started building for the future. Now, this BRICS idea is only 6 years old. So we're setting at a major, major, major change in geopolitics, in geoeconomics, in geoenergy, and geomilitary. I mean, it is changing fast. And the only thing that the U.S. can do, or not can do, but is doing, is poking Russia in the eye and trying to screw up Russia's relationship with Europe, poking China in the eye, and moving military into the East and flexing its muscles. And you know, and the neocons are screaming war. This is what your leaders are doing in a changing world. And you know what? They ain't going to stop it. Unless they push the big red button, they ain't going to stop it. So the question is, will you get some people in there, again, what I said earlier, that recognize that, hey, the world's changed. I don't know why, Rex, there's times I want to beat my head on the wall. Thank God I have a heavy bag to punch. But
yeah.
If anybody didn't realize, yeah, a dual system, if anybody didn't realize China was going to become the largest economy in the world after we invested and all of our companies went over there and we opened the doors and we went there to develop them, well, then you're a freaking idiot. I mean, what the hell did we go there for? You know, we put Japan back together, okay, and like you said, Japan and Germany, and they got busy after they got the shit blown out of them, and they put their countries back together, and they started building shit, and they started trading. And next thing you know, they were an economic, especially Japan, was an economic threat to the U.S. for a long time. Unfortunately, Japanese made a big mistake. They got in massive debt. You know, and they had hyperinflation, and now they're screwed, you know, at a 200-300% debt to GDP. You know, bad politicians. That's what the problem was. It wasn't productivity. You know, we went to Indonesia. We went to the Philippines. We went to Vietnam. We went to these third world nations, you know, because cheap labor, because Americans want to buy cheap shit, because our economy sucks, and we can't afford to make stuff like they can, you know, and so you can buy a $30, $40 pair of jeans. You know, if we made it here, it'd be $100. So our companies were given the freedom to go into these other countries and develop. You know, we had the IMF and the Fed. You know, the IMF is their basically their arm, you know, controlled mostly by the U.S., even though it's supposed to be more balanced than that. That's another reason the BRICS Bank was formed, you know, because of the imbalance in the voting structure that's being held up in our Senate. You know, when the IMF and all the voting members have said, hey, Russia, China, India, they're bigger now. They need a larger voting share proportionally. And when they set up the BRICS Bank, it doesn't matter who has how much money in the bank. It's equal. Equal voting
hey,
share.
Chris,
you know, like China's putting up $40 billion. Go ahead.
Hey, Chris, speaking of money in the bank, We've only got 90 seconds in the hopper. So if you want to listen live, and a bunch of you are, your browser is going to shut you down in less than 90 seconds. You have to call in and listen on your handset, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. If you can't join us for Liberty's Thunder After Dark, you can always cache the archives. Go to Liberty's, go to Blog Talk Radio /Liberty's Thunder, and you can play the rest of this show and all of our shows and keep sharing them and getting them out there so people can get a different perspective on what's going on rather than what the Fox Noise and MSLSD and Communist News Network are telling them. And we appreciate everybody who's been helping us get the show out there, all of you for listening, and we thank you very much for it. But you got to call in now, 646-649-1013. If you're in podcast or on the Internet and Archive, just keep on rolling, Chris.
Keep on rolling, dog. Yeah, so anyway, you know, to sum this up, the world as it is today is because the U.S. made a decision to develop certain parts of the world. Now that they're developed and they're becoming independent and they're not able to be controlled, now the people in power in this country are trying to turn them into enemies. And that's what you have to understand. If you don't understand that, then you're just going to be a drone for Hannity and the rest in Fox Noise while they build the next enemy. Putin this, Putin that, Putin this, oh my God, China this, China that, China this. You know, all they do is bitch and moan and try to get you to hate on somebody on the other side of the world, and you don't even know what the hell is going on over there. That's the most frustrating thing about trying to communicate politics, geopolitics, you know, and foreign policy to people is they have these preconceived notions of a country they know nothing about, you know? And the thing of it is that when you do the research and you go to the other side of the world, so to speak, and you look back across the world through the eyes of these other countries, and then you begin to see it's a really big-ass world, and there's a lot going on, and we cannot control it all, and we can't manipulate it all, and we can't bomb it all. Well, we potentially could bomb it all, but that wouldn't be very good for anybody, and we can't control it militarily. It doesn't work. It will not work, and it's creating a different type of – forget the Middle East and the potential, you know, blowback concept with, you know, with the Muslim jihadists. Look at the countries of the world that we should be partners and friends with and the potential blowback of turning Russia and China into an enemy or India. That's a whole different freaking game. And that's the game that Fox is playing, that your neocons are playing, that the you know, the Perrys and the Bushes and all those kinds of people are playing, and the McCains and the Senate, especially the Senate Republicans. You know, they're trying to create enemies out of countries, number one, we can't afford to be enemies with, and number two, should be our natural allies. That's what's really sick about this thing. And the other thing is you ain't going to solve it. All you're going to do is continue to push countries away from the U.S. And that's what's happening. You know, it started, and Obama has done a crappy job, yes. Bush started it. You know, when he decided to wage war on the world and he stood up and said, you're either for us or you're against us. You're either on our side or you're the, you know, basically created a war around the world and divided people. Because there's a lot of people didn't agree, especially with the invasion of Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11. That had to do with a neocon agenda, and a lot of people know what that agenda was. 7 countries in 7 years. Why? Because those countries were doing exactly what Russia and China is doing today, and that is moving away from the U.S. dollar, building their own trade alliances, and saying, I've had enough bullying and manipulation by these insane people who can't even control their own damn economy or keep their own borders safe. We're going to do our own thing, and we're going to break free of that control mode, that mechanism, that empire mentality, and we're going to do our own thing. We're big boys and girls. We can run our own damn countries, and we can do our own trade deals, and we can use our money. It works. It's good. And that's what's happened. And we're living the direct end of that. Where we go from here depends everything on people in power sitting down and having a calm voice. That's why I like, you know, I don't know if Rand's running or not. Who knows? Whatever. Doesn't matter. But I like his calmness saying, you know, and like what Newt was saying. You know, Newt comes from a hawkish background. You know, he was part of the Reagan generation, you know, in the Cold War. And I remember, I don't know, what was it, months ago, he said, I am totally rethinking my foreign policy because what we did not work. Now, I can look at somebody and say, well, I didn't like this about him and that about him and this about him. But when they can sit up in front of national television and say, you know, I was wrong. I have to respect that in people because the ones that all they do is attack people for being different than their agenda or their beliefs, and they attack them and smear them, are not willing to admit they're wrong. Why would you want that kind of person in power? You know, that's the key to this whole conversation about 2014 and 2016 is saying, I was wrong. You know, what we did didn't work. What our foreign policy is around the world is not working. What we've done inside of our country and our economy is not working, and we need to sit down and have a national conversation before we end up as a second world nation because that's the direction we're going. Back to you.
War, war, and more war. that was good. And as soon as I get done with this, Chris, we'll go to final thoughts. And I got a 12-minute closing clip. It's got some Rand, some Reagan, and a little perspective on what's going on. But, yeah, if you want to grow your economy, the first thing is we use the word U.S. dollar, but let's be clear. There's been no such thing as a U.S. dollar for 100 years. It's a Federal Reserve note, and it is not being done for your benefit. Now, granted, when we have a pyramid scheme across the globe and the money flows to our country, we benefit. But once it gets here, it's another pyramid scheme that takes it to the top 0.001%. So you're not benefiting. And that's the crazy thing. If you want to build your economy with sound money, with no direct income taxation, with a free market, the way America is supposed to be, the way we built America, okay, you're in the current paradigm, which is not an agrarian 18th century, it's not even a mercantilist 19th century, we are talking about an interconnected, technologically advanced global economy. It's about to go stellar, and it's about to accelerate. We are on the verge of a technological boom in bioscience, in computer science, in space science. We got a lot of things coming, unless we get to destroy the world before it even happens. You're going to have to trade with the world. If you are pissing everybody off because of a small clique of neocon sycophants and psychopaths who control the foreign policy and blow people up all over the place, engendering hatred, you're going to have a real tough time asking them to trade with you. That's the bottom line. That's what's going to happen. So for our future, and not only is it the moral thing to do, it's a practical thing to do, we need to have a resolved, reasonable, thoughtful foreign policy whereby we will kill the bad guys. Because let's face it, there are some Muslim jihadis that are not going to stop trying to kill everybody. Okay? They have to be killed. We have to have a reasonable foreign policy. We have to be in a strong position economically and militarily and technologically in order to be able to cut their heads off when they peek out of their sand pits and whatever other bad guys and criminal cartels and drug cartels and all that kind of stuff. But when these criminals are basically propped up and set up by your alleged intelligence community, you got a problem. Because what happens is, and this, what happens overseas happens here. This appropriated government creates a friggin' problem, and then they show up and they tell you, here's the solution we have for the problem. You caused the problem. I don't want you to fix it. Get the hell out of my way. That doesn't mean we want to get rid of the government. It doesn't mean without a government we're screwed. We need government to order our lives together, and it does have certain responsibilities at different levels for different things. But this is not that, and that is the problem. So as you're looking around and your favorite issue is, you know, we need to support Israel at all costs, you got to think about why. Why do you think that? What is your interest? How is it an American interest to do that? Now, I'm not saying that we leave them completely alone and let them just, you know, get slaughtered and overrun by Muslim jihadis. By all means, no. But they can handle themselves. They're big boys. The other thing is, who's in charge over here and over there? Because CIA and Mossad created Al-Qaeda and Hamas. They created ISIS. They're creating these problems in tandem with the Muslim Brotherhood to topple countries, and then they're having us go fix the problem. Why did they create the problem in the first place? I want to be trading. I want to make money. I want to make friends. I want to kill the bad guys. But don't create more bad guys so that we don't have money and time and people to deal with the issue. And don't send the maimed and limbless vets back here and make them wait in line so that they die while you're feeding, quote, refugees from south of our border, which you haven't secured. You see the problem? They create these problems, and then they sell you the solution. That's what's going on, and you have to put a stop to it. You're powerless to do it over there, but you're not powerless to do it over here. What you need is people who understand that that's the problem and how to fix it. Now, you're not looking for a savior. You're not looking for, quote, a leader. You're looking for someone who's going to lead you. You have to do the work. But you can't do it when you keep electing hopey-changey douchebags who happen to be just like the last severely conservative douchebag who actually caused the problem in the first place. The plan over there is to cut up the Middle East into small little countries which are easily controlled as satellite states for somebody else's interest, to put pipelines through, as Chris was talking about. BRICS is not happy with this. They don't want a Western hegemony of not an honest broker like we used to be, but of a power that is trying to squeeze them dry. They're not going to put up with that. So what are you going to do, blow up the world? Who are you going to trade with? And if you nuke the whole planet, do you think the Fortress America will survive, or do you think there's going to be some radiation over here too? That's not a solution. But if we keep pushing, it might get there. That's how important this is. And keep in mind that the president's principal job is national defense. The Congress's principal job is those 18 items listed in the Constitution as their enumerated powers. None of this has anything to do with providing you with crap or fixing your economy. You fix your economy. You run the country. They run the government that creates the conditions by which we run the country. They protect the integrity of these United States. But when your border is an open sieve, what national security thing are you worried about? You're worried about some misguided Hamas rockets that may or may not land in Tel Aviv and may or may not blow up someone's car? So we go and we level 400 Palestinians, getting them all pissed off at us and emboldening jihadis around the world, when in fact you've got MS-13 and drug gangs and all sorts of diseases crossing your southern border? If anything, the commander-in-chief is supposed to protect that border. The governor of Texas, Rick Perry, should be protecting that border, not mouthing off and lying and calling Rand Paul an isolationist because he thinks that he might get the nod for the president. Remember that Governor Rick Perry, whom some of you probably still like, and I have to agree, you know, he said some good things regarding the Fed, he's done some good things on the 10th Amendment, but just remember something. There was another Texan with a swagger who came and promised you all this Reagan bullshit and delivered you nothing but Cheney neoconism. His name was George W. Bush. Don't fall for that crap again. You know who Rick Perry is? Rick Perry's a nobody who was nobody even in Texas Republican politics. He was handpicked from the Democrat Party by one piece of shit ham named Karl Rove. No, they don't get along anymore. I don't care. Karl Rove built Rick Perry from a Democrat, just like Mitt Romney, who was a Democrat, was built by the same pricks. And now he's out here attacking Rand Paul? Who the hell does he think he is when he's got a sieve on his border? Why doesn't he call up the National Guard and protect that southern border? It's not just Texas's border. That's the national border with a foreign nation that is sending drugs and disease and gangs onto our streets. I'm far more concerned about that than I am about whether some Muslim wants to kill some Jew on the other side of a wall. I'm not saying that that's not something we should care about as human beings. But you know what? People are going to get killed on our streets by these guys. And this is America. We have to take care of ourselves first. If we're healthy, if we're secure, if we're out of debt, if we're trading with everybody, we're in a much better position to help the rest of the world. Right now, we're sick. We're on the decline. Yeah, we're light years ahead of everybody else. But how long do you think that's going to last in this state? Get your priorities straight. How dare Rick Perry go after Rand Paul? Who the hell does he think he is? And guess what? Rand Paul is kicking his ass. And next month, they'll trot out another freaking rhino to attack Rand Paul. Anyway, Chris, we'll wrap this up, so I'll let you go. Final thoughts.
That was beautiful. I was going to tell you something else, and I forgot, because, you know, the problem with BRICS is we have just started talking about it, but I have, you know, posted about 5,000 posts on it. So, you know, I was trying to cover a lot really fast. But one of the other things that they're doing, which I just got a kick out of, is they're laying brand new communication cable between those five countries because they're sick of the NSA lying and spying. I just thought that was just hilarious. So they're going to, you know, oceanic cables from, you know, Russia, China, India, Brazil and South America. That's a pretty big investment. I think they must be concerned about the fact that the United States can't keep out of people's business. You know,
oh, it's
really
the NSA thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
You know, so they're laying this freaking new cable. You know, it's a big investment. But, you know, these people are serious. And I don't know. What are we doing? I don't know. You know, toppling countries, you know, funding rebels. You know, I mean, it's just insane. It's beyond insane because it ain't going to work anymore. People are waking up. The world is already woken up, and they're making moves. And one of the things, I don't remember if it was Rickard or Schiff, or I don't remember which one it was, but they said the next crash that we have, the next correction, which Santelli, you know, he lost his mind there, but could have said, is there's another one coming. We got the biggest bubbles we've ever had. We've never printed this much money. The Fed has never run this long on a zero interest on their money going out into the marketplace, and we got huge bubbles, and they're going to pop. And it's like what Schiff was saying. He never said the stock market wouldn't grow, and you and I have never said the stock market wouldn't grow. But what we've always said is that it's all fake, and it's going to pop. And when it pops, you will see the largest exit from the U.S. dollar in about the same balance of what we had in 2008 with everybody moving to the U.S. dollar, because that's what allowed the Fed to print all that money, was everybody around the world, China, India. You know, it was the largest percentage of foreign investment in U.S. debt bonds in our history. And that was because everybody was moving to the safe haven of the U.S. dollar. Well, everybody's moving away from it. And when we have that hiccup and the stock market goes kabam next time, next year, this year, 2016, I'm not sure, I'm not that good, but I know it's coming, you're going to see an exodus from it, which will make it even harder to recover. And if they move away from the U.S. reserve currency, and I don't know when that's going to happen, but it's definitely on the decline, you're not going to have that reserve currency and all those people buying your debt. It's going to force us to fix our problems. But the pain is going to be greater because for the last 5.5 years, they've done nothing to repair the underlying problems in this country, while the Republican rhinos and neocons are busy trying to stir up trouble all around the world and restart the Cold War with Russia and add China to the mix. That's how insane these jerks are. I remember back in 2012 in the primary, I had this mantra. I kept saying over and over and over again, regardless of Obama, regardless of the Democrats, if you don't oust all of the Bush-era rhinos, nothing will change in the future. I started saying that back in 2012 because I believed in my heart that people were not getting the point, you know, regardless of Obama, that this mess we're in our country and around the world, 5 debt ceiling increases under the Republicans, endless war on terror, you know, the Afghan, you know, I mean, just the whole mess that we've been under, that Obama's mismanaged or on purpose, whatever, however you want to look at it, started in that period of time when the Republicans had total control of the House, of the Senate, and the presidency. And they went hog wild, spent money, launched wars, built the Patriot Act, built Homeland Security, the TSA, all the crap that you live every day that everybody wants to pin on Obama started then. And I'm not giving him any breaks. I'm just trying to get people educated. And that's why I used to say, if you don't get rid of these rhinos, that group of people that were part of that power system, you know, part of that's when the neocons rose up and got national power. You know, they'd always been there, but that's when they really got their foothold into our political system in Washington, D.C. And you're living it now. So if you don't get rid of them, nothing changes. If we don't get a president in there in 2016 that's got a America first vision instead of, you know, empire of the world vision, nothing changes. And they'll just keep running it down the road until we're in a world war or total crash and lose the dollar. Because you lose a reserve currency and the trillions and trillions and trillions. What are we at? $100+ trillion of unfunded liabilities. You know, it depends on who you listen to. Some people say it's more. You know, some people say it's a lot more. We got no way to pay it back, and so the crash is real, and that will really wake some people up in this country. I just hope we wake people up before then, so we can start making those adjustments and changes and start moving this monster ship before we end up like the Edmund Fitzgerald. You know, it's really that simple. It doesn't get any more complicated than that. And I say it all the time. People on the group. You know, I keep saying two things I'm concerned with. Yeah, there's some things Rand has said that I'm not real sure of, and, you know, maybe he was under pressure, or maybe we don't know his full position, or whatever the case may be. Two things I'm concerned with, because it's the future or no future of the USSA, and that is economics and foreign policy. If you don't get those right, forget it. All these other things you're worried about ain't going to mean diddly crap. Republicans ain't stopping any of it, are they?
Nope.
Show me one thing they've stopped or blocked or had an effective challenge on. In fact, every time a conservative tried to have a real challenge on issues like Obamacare with Ted Cruz or Rand on the NSA, he got beat up by his own party.
Mm-hmm.
They got beat up by his own party. So if that isn't a wake-up call of what we're facing, and I'm like you. I'm not a Republican. I give a crap. It just tends to be where I would vote. It tends to be where people I would vote for are at. But as far as the party is concerned, the GOP and Rince Priebus and Karl Rove and all those scumbags, I absolutely despise these people. They represent nothing I believe in. But there are good people in that party, and they're fighting every day to try to do something with this country. I have some issues with Ted, he has great, great points on certain things. There's some issues I have with him. Rand, same thing. All of them, you know, they're not perfect. But if they're fighting for the Constitution, state sovereignty, sound economics, Constitution, and the rule of law, you know, that one last thing, the rule of law and the Bill of Rights and those foundational things that made this country what it is and will make it what it can be again in the future, if they're not fighting for those things, they are my enemy. It's that simple. Because they're scumbags. They have some, you know, crazy world globalist, insane freaking, you know, goal. North American Union, who knows? Pick your conspiracy, because they're all real. That's the scary part about it. You know, and there's a bunch of people with all their different ideas of what they want to do and not do, and they're all insane. And it'll be on your back, and you will pay for it as your freedoms go down the toilet. I'm done.
Yep. Oh, look, the situation's bleak. It's scary stuff. Chris and I bring up a lot of scary stuff. No, we're not trying to doom and gloom you or put fear into you. The simple fact is this is what it is. This is where we are. You got to deal with reality as it is, not as you wish it would be. It sucks. You got two choices. You can curl up in the fetal position and hide, or you can do something about it. And what do you do about it? You've got to reach out to people who actually share our values. Now, does that mean they have to be exactly like you? No. This is America. We are independent individuals with different ideas of how we want to live our own lives. But we have to order our life together. That's why there are some broad principles upon which we need to agree. What you need to do is wake up the people who actually believe that, who share those principles and values, but who are conditioned by massive amounts of propaganda to believe all sorts of crazy stuff. And when I say that, I'm talking about the mainstream media, mass propaganda designed to pitch you into these camps of left versus right and make you think that one guy's better than the other guy, as well as some of the kooky shit on the alternate media. All right? Aliens are not controlling the planet. All right? This is not some kind of sci-fi movie. All right, the Rothschild family is not friggin' Moriarty or Blofeld or Smurfs or Spectre. All right, do they have their hands in it? Sure, but let's be clear about something. The globalists are not of one mind. They're not a hive. It's not a conspiracy of design per se. Yes, some of them are involved with each other. Some of them have these designs. I mentioned the clean break plan, the other plans the neocons have come up with, Federal Reserve scheme, the IMF, all that stuff. Yeah, those are genuine conspiracies and plans. But there are competing globalists. Now, they will fight tooth and nail to defeat each other, except for one thing, when it comes to a threat to the system. And then they're of one mind, because it's a community of interests. So don't focus on stuff you can't do anything about, but educate people. If you go up to a regular run-of-the-mill conservative Republican and start yelling, Rothschild, Federal Reserve, neocon, they're not going to listen to you. They're going to think you're crazy. That's how they painted Ron Paul. You have to educate them by bringing them out of their closed-minded paradigm and show them how the values for which they really genuinely stand are being compromised by the way that they've been taught to think. You have to be persuasive. Now, why do you have to do this? Because if you're listening, because if you know, because if you agree with even 60% of what Chris and I are talking about, then do your own research. When he mentions the group, he's talking about Liberty's Talk. Get in his group. Read the documents. Look at the videos. You're not going to agree with everything. And frankly, in order to get to the truth, you have to triangulate your sources, and none of them are going to give you the, quote, whole truth. If you listen to RT, you're going to get a totally different perspective than what you get from U.S. media. But it is Russia-biased. So then go to Al Jazeera, where you're going to get some Qatari bias, but you're going to get a different perspective. And then corroborate that with Fox News, and then look at a couple of sources of people who've actually proven their integrity, like Pepe Escobar or Peter Schiff or something like that. And you can kind of coalesce the truth. And you don't have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. In fact, you can't. But you can put enough pieces of the puzzle together to figure out, okay, who's actually defending our real interests? Who is actually a real threat out there in the world that wasn't fabricated by Mossad, MI6, or the CIA? Right? Or, you know, the NSA is spying on us. We have to wipe out the NSA. Are you crazy? We need the NSA. We have to spy on other people. There are dangerous people out there. The problem is when the NSA is data mining all of our data, they're not defending us. They're controlling us. That's not what they're designed for. When you have militarized police on every street, busting in doors, shooting people's dogs and old people and kids and veterans dying in line at the VA, we are not taking care of our own. We are being victims. So some people freak out when you say neocon. Oh, it's a neocon. Well, go back and look at our – I don't know how many shows we've done on neocons and how many we've done on the Federal Reserve. Go back and look them up. Neoconservatives are not conservative. They use the word neoconservative to fool conservatives. They're not conservatives. Their principal allegiance is not to the integrity of the United States. Their principal allegiance is to a global hegemony of other people who are transnational bankers. They're not your friend. They're infiltrators. They were originally Trotskyites. They came from the left, and they didn't come from the Democratic Party and became conservative like, say, a Ronald Reagan. They just came over to appropriate, quote, the right side of the equation. All right? And for all you libertarians out there, like, well, I don't like Rand Paul because he's not libertarian. I'm going to go vote for Gary Johnson. Give me a break. The guy is now CEO of some pot company. Do you really think mainstream America is going to vote for that guy? It's not going to happen. But they will vote for Rand Paul. You have to be practical. The base of the Republican Party are middle class, Christian, run-of-the-mill conservatives. But they can't win alone, and no one can win without them. If you don't embrace the, quote, libertarian kids, which I don't even know what kids means because I'm in my 40s, Chris is in his 50s, Rand Paul's in his 40s, you're not going to win either. It's about a coalition. Well, how are they going to get along? Well, it's real simple. If you're pro-life, you believe in the non-aggression principle. If you believe in the non-aggression principle, you probably should be pro-life, but even if you're not, that's not the number one issue. We're not going to fix that politically. That's a cultural problem. That's just the way that it is. It sucks. I think it's a very important issue for a number of reasons, and I'm 100% pro-life, but I will work with people who might not be, provided we agree on the Constitution, we agree on national sovereignty, we agree on rule of law, and I will try to persuade them why my position is correct, and hopefully we can mend the culture. But for you libertarians who think that It's all about the Constitution, ending the Federal Reserve, and destroying the Rothschild family, and how much you can't stand Israel. You're not going to get mainstream Republicans to see things from your perspective ever. But you can pull them out of their Fox News mold and show them how someone like, for example, Rand Paul will help create a fusion based on the broad principles upon which we do agree. That's what you have to do. The Federal Reserve, people will start freaking out, going, oh, without the Federal Reserve, our economy is crashing. Well, it might, but that'd be okay. Santelli was going apoplectic on the floor there. But we would probably be past it already. Sometimes you got to clean off the dross. And you can't pay off this debt, so you either have to write it off or inflate to such a level that we'll be completely impoverished. Those are not good options. There aren't really too many good options at all. But we have to start going back to the rule of law, back to the Constitution, back to putting America first. That is not going to happen with neoconservatives. It's not going to happen with Federal Reserve shills. It is not going to happen with extreme libertarians who want no state. And it's not going to happen if Christian voters are out there enamored with the next stadium-style huckster lingo from a Mike Huckabee, or even someone who generally I agree with on matters of faith and morals, Rick Santorum, who just happens to be a shitty politician, a bad communicator, and a big government rhino. You're going to have to build these coalitions. Rand Paul right now is the point man on putting that coalition together. And like Chris said, does he have problems? Yes. You know, the voter ID thing, maybe that's not a real good, red meat for conservative voters. Well, let's be clear about something. That's the one they're going to slaughter the next Republican candidate on. He's taking that off the table. Well, he endorsed some people I don't like. Well, you know, he's in the party. He's in Washington, D.C. He's one of 100 senators. He's behind enemy lines. And the majority leader of the party, thanks to people abandoning Matt Bevin, is likely to be Mitch McConnell, the guy from his state. It's crazy. It's a bad situation. It's horrible. You do the best that you can. And that isn't settling for the, quote, lesser of two or three evils. Because just that you don't agree with everybody. I mean, look, go back to Ronald Reagan. If you actually study his record, I assure you, you will find some things that you really don't like. There was some gun control stuff that was done in there. There was amnesty done in there. There were some foreign interventions that weren't declared by Congress done in there. So are we going to throw out the 80s? Maybe you like Reagan, maybe you don't like Reagan, but the simple fact is if you look back since World War II, there's been none like him, and the country hadn't done better except when he was president. And it's not that the president sets the agenda, but you need a president who has the balls to actually contain the executive government and all its branches and get them out of your life. That's what you need. Rand Paul can do that. I'm not shilling for Rand Paul here. It's just that he's the one that's under attack right now, and it's not about attacking Rand Paul per se, and it's not about defending Rick Perry. They're attacking Rand Paul, whether it's Perry or Santorum or McCain or Cheney or Dole or Sununu or whoever the hell else is attacking him. They're not attacking Rand Paul per se. They are attacking you. They are beating on you and telling you that whoever we tell you is the most electable douchebag, that's who you're going to vote for, or you're going to end up with Hillary Clinton. Remember the anybody but Obama bullshit that they fed you back in 2012? Guess what? It worked. It worked on enough people that Romney got to steal the nomination and went ahead and lost to Obama. Lost to Obama. How any Republican can lose to a guy like Obama in his second term is unbelievable. But Karl Rove found the one guy who could do that. And Jeb Bush or Mitt Romney again or Chris Christie is the next guy who's going to bring you a President Hillary Clinton or a President Elizabeth Warren, which will be an absolute friggin' disaster. So they're attacking you. They're attacking you because you are against the corrupt, crony, neocon Federal Reserve appropriated system, and you believe in the Constitution, the rule of law, sound money, peace through strength, They don't want you to have those things. They want to talk about those things, but they don't want you to have those things. So you need to get your heads out of your asses, put down your pet peeve issue and your pet candidate and the nitpicky bullshit on guys like Cruz, Lee, Amash, Paul, and all those guys, Gohmert and Trey Gowdy, and fight for them to be in leadership positions and increase the ranks of people who know what's going on. Without that force multiplier, we're screwed. That doesn't mean you're sharing this show. Chris and I aren't doing this to be popular. We're doing this to get you off your butt and actually grow our ranks so that we can really make a difference and right the ship. And it isn't going to happen in the next election or the election after that. But if we don't turn it around now, you can kiss your ass goodbye. Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. That's where we're going. Anyway. The important thing is that Rand Paul is fighting the good fight, and he cannot do it alone. Do not allow Fox News and the neocons at the Washington Post and pricks like Rick Perry, a Democrat made come Republican by Karl Rove, okay, to disgrace and put down and mischaracterize the guy who's fighting the good fight, because what they're doing is they're undermining the principles for which you stand. They're attacking you, and you should take it personally. And you should stand up for Rand Paul, not because he's Rand Paul. You stand up for Rand Paul because he's standing up for you. That's why. And you got to educate these other people. You got to think, because these neocons think that the United States is a dumb giant, that you're stupid enough to let them appropriate your might to build up their palace, and then they'll throw you away and discard you like yesterday's news as soon as they're done with you. And they're almost done. $100 trillion debt, diminishing warrior capacity, debased currency, moral decay. This is how Rome went down. And by the way, when the Roman Empire expanded, they dealt with a lot of wars. In fact, the temple in Jerusalem that had been the center of Hebrew worship since before Christ, was destroyed in 70 AD by the Romans because of the Jewish wars, which were basically terrorist actions against the imperial power of Rome. So when you have an empire, you will have terrorism. Does that mean if you don't have an empire that no one's going to try to kill you and everyone's going to get along and it's going to be hunky-dory? No, it's not. There will always be people trying to kill you. You will always have to be ready for war. But you don't have to stick your nose at every conflict around the planet and be the policeman of the world. It doesn't work. You're overextended. You won't succeed. And any time that you engage in that kind of activity, you'll end up with a tyranny at home and then eventually collapse. So we need to come back to our center. And that does not mean remove ourselves from the world. But it means that the world locally has to step up and fight their own fights. After all the work we did in Iraq, the Iraqi Maliki government security forces caved when they were faced with a CIA Mossad-trained force of Islamic psychotics that were armed in Syria because we were trying to topple the last secular Arab regime there, and now it's a blowback. Or by design, either way, it doesn't frickin' matter. That's the kind of stuff that happens. Don't let them take your might and use it for wrong. And I don't often quote scripture, but sometimes it's important. This is Wisdom, chapter 6, verse 7. It says, "The mighty shall be mightily tormented." That means when you misuse your strength and you use it for unjust purposes, you will be tormented equally to what you have done. That's coming to us if we don't stop misusing our might by mucking up a planet. That's where we are. Rand Paul is standing up for you. Rick Perry is a rhino prick, and I'm sorry for those of you who liked him, but the guy you thought you liked is not the guy who he is. Wake up and smell the roses. The picture might be bleak, but we are Americans. We've been here before. We were born in war. We took on the biggest, baddest imperial military on the planet, and we won. We split over economic issues and the fact that we were engaged in the immoral activity of enslaving people. We had 700,000 Americans die in the war for Southern independence, and we came through that. We saved the world in World War II. We can be a force for good, and we are unstoppable when we are. But we've lost our way. And someone like Rand Paul is not an isolationist. He's not an America hater. He's not the lover of our enemies. If you want to see an America hater who loves our enemies, he's sitting in the friggin' White House. And we put him there twice. Why? I'll tell you. I'll give you two reasons why Obama won. Well, three reasons why Obama won. Bush, McCain, Romney. Lay it at the feet of the Republican rhinos. Someone like Rand Paul will be able to crush anybody the Democrats put up with. But not if you attack him now, not if you allow the Republicans to attack him now, not if you allow what happened to McDaniel in Mississippi happen, and not if you don't defend Justin Amash August 5th. Get busy. We can do this. We can be great again. Is it going to be hard? Yes. Are we in a deeper hole than we've ever been? Yes. Is it more dangerous than it's ever been? Yes. Well, get excited, because when things look this bad, the nobility of liberty shines even brighter. But it isn't a gift. It is something you earn by fighting, by kicking ass, by being honest, and by being shrewd. Don't fall for the bullshit that comes out of the TV. Don't fall for the crap that they put all over the editorial pages. And don't buy any of the bullshit that Perry is feeding you about Rand Paul. Stand up. Be counted. You're an American. Liberty is your inheritance. It is required that you give it to your posterity. Don't piss it away. We'll be back next Sunday. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
Ooh, baby. And the thunder of liberty rumbles on.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
Regime change in Iraq will bring about a number of benefits to the region.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency.
Now, Rand Paul, pointing to things like that, wrote in the Wall Street Journal also, many of those clamoring for military action now are the same people who made every false assumption imaginable about the cost, challenge, and purpose of the Iraq war. They have been wrong for so long. Why should we listen to them again? Your response?
With all due respect, John, I was a strong supporter then of going into Iraq. I'm a strong supporter now. Everybody knows what my position is. There's nothing to be argued about there. But if we spend our time debating what happened 11 or 12 years ago, we're going to miss the threat that is growing and that we do face. Rand Paul, with all due respect, is basically an isolationist. He doesn't believe we are.
I did express the view that I think isolationism is crazy. Anybody who went through 9/11, who thinks we can retreat behind our oceans and will be safe and secure, is
out of nowhere.
I'm sorry,
all of a sudden, you have the governor of Texas just attack a senator from Kentucky on foreign policy by name. What you're more accustomed to hearing is things like what Dick Cheney said there at that event, where you don't name the person. You say anyone who would believe this would be crazy. What Rick Perry said is, I think that's what Rand Paul thinks, and I think it's a bad idea.
Basically an isolationist. He doesn't believe we ought to be involved in that part of the world. I think it's
bad. Just like witches at black masses.
Yeah. Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us. All who oppose them are indicted as warmongers. They say we offer simple answers to complex problems. Well, perhaps there is a simple answer. Not an easy answer, but simple. If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right, we cannot buy our security, our freedom from the threat of the bomb, by committing an immorality so great as saying to a billion human beings now enslaved behind the Iron Curtain, give up your dreams of freedom, because to save our own skins, we're willing to make a deal with your slave masters. Alexander Hamilton said, a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master and deserves one. Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war. But there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, And this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? Well, Nikita Khrushchev has told his people he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better red than dead, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond
which... Stand by and watch this great country destroy itself under mediocre leadership that drifts from one crisis to the next, eroding our national will and purpose. We have come together here because the American people deserve better from those to whom they entrust our nation's highest offices. And we stand united. We stand united in our resolve to do something about it. There may be a sailor at the helm of the ship of state, but the ship has no rudder. Critical decisions are made at times almost in comic fashion, but who can laugh? Who was not embarrassed when the administration handed a major propaganda victory in the United Nations to the enemies of Israel? Who does not feel a growing sense of unease as our allies, facing repeated instances of an amateurish and confused administration, reluctantly conclude that America is unwilling or unable to fulfill its obligations as leader of the free world? Who does not feel rising alarm when the question in any discussion of foreign policy is no longer, should we do something, but do we have the capacity to do anything? We're not a warlike people, quite the opposite. We always seek to live in peace. We resort to force infrequently and with great reluctance, and only after we've determined that it's absolutely necessary. We are awed, and rightly so, by the forces of destruction that loosen the world in this nuclear era. But neither can we be naive or foolish. Four times in my lifetime, America has gone to war, bleeding the lives of its young men into the sands of island beachheads, the fields of Europe, and the jungles and rice paddies of Asia. We know only too well that war comes not when the forces of freedom are strong. It is when they are weak that tyrants are tempted. We simply cannot learn these lessons the hard way again without risking our destruction.
I'm a fan of Reagan's. I believe in peace through strength, but not necessarily war through strength. Some of the neocons think that war is always the answer. I think we should be strong enough that no one will ever attack us. If anyone does attack us, we respond with overwhelming force. But we don't get involved in murky situations like Syria, where we will be giving arms to Islamic extremists, Islamic rebels, who are allied with Al-Qaeda. That's one irony. The second irony is we will be arming Islamic rebels who in all likelihood will be eventually killing Christians, because Christians are allied with Assad on the other side. So I see no great solution there and no real friend to support.
Reagan uses rhetoric and he uses diplomacy, but boy, did he also use power, right?
Yes, but I would say if you look at him with regard to involvement, I would say that he in some ways was more restrained than presidents before or after him as far as direct military involvement.
When we were in Lebanon and had the tragedy with the Marines there, he actually made the decision to come home because he said it was too murky and they couldn't figure out and it wasn't a safe way to have him in there. It gets, you know, goes forward to like Benghazi now. Was it safe to have an embassy there? Was it safe to have an embassy under State Department control? Was it safe to stay there when all your military support was saying we need more security and it was denied? So I think that Reagan really exemplified peace through strength, but I think some of the neoconservatives up here interpret that as war through strength, that war is always the option, that we always have to be involved. But consequently, they get caught up in a lot of contradictions. So, for example, many of the people who wanted to arm the Libyan rebels also wanted to arm Gaddafi the year before. Now many of them want to arm the Syrian rebels who are allied with al-Qaeda against Assad, against who is also allied with the Christians. So it's really a murky situation.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty.
Let it be shown, we chose to die on our feet rather than live on our knees.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death construction. The body's burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. The power.